Sandra or? No, okay. All right. Why don't we start with the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Right. This is the November 2023 public meeting of the Planning Board of the Township of Clinton, County of Hunterdon, State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, in that an annual notice was published in the Hunterdon County Democrat, and the notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the township website, the bulletin boards at the front of the municipal building, the front door of the public safety building, and faxed to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger no later than the Friday prior to the meeting. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Aversa?
Here.
Butcher.
Absent. Aye.
Kevin's got it.
Johnson.
Absent.
Aye.
That's mine.
Hagan.
Absent.
Yeah. But I said the wrong thing. He's got his.
Blazer.
Here.
Finance.
Here.
McCaffrey.
Here.
Malay.
Absent.
That's mine.
Stamay.
Here.
2-2, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Next time. We have no meeting minutes or resolutions. First up, we do have a public hearing. Ingerman Development Company, LLC, Willows at Spruce Run. 1130 Route 22, Block 70, Lot 6 and 601. The applicant is seeking a preliminary site plan and variance relief to construct a multifamily inclusionary housing development. Good evening. Hang on. Before you go, one thing I will note is, did I miss something? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Applicant is seeking amended preliminary site plan approval, final site plan approval, and variance relief to construct a multifamily inclusionary housing development. And I just will note for folks who are here, the mayor and Mr. Higgins are recusing from this.
Right.
So because this is really the only thing on the agenda, they didn't come. But they're not just not coming.
And therefore, their absences should be excused because they recused.
Very well. That's a lot of accusing.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay?
Sure.
All right. Great. So good evening, everybody. I'm Kate Coffey from Day Pitney. It's nice to see you all again. I'm here tonight on behalf of Ingerman Development Company, LLC, which is the contract purchaser of the properties that we'll be talking about this evening. The property is located at Block 70, Lot 6 and 6.01, which the street addresses are 1726 and 1730 Route 31. We are seeking amended preliminary and final site plan approval. As the chairman noted, we received preliminary site plan approval from this board in July of 2021. I'll note that this hearing was carried from your November 6th meeting, so we're happy to be before you. In terms of what's being proposed, we're proposing to consolidate the two lots, Lot 6 and Lot 6.01, into a single lot. Lot 6.01 is currently occupied by the Spruce Run Veterinary Hospital, and Lot 6 is what I would call a vacant lot, but I have learned from your professionals in their memos that it is a successional wooded lot, which means that it was farmed until about 1970 and it is now growing wild. We are located in the AH9 affordable housing zone, which was created by the Township Council, and that zoning was updated recently in September of this year. This project is a component of the Township's housing element and fair share plan. In terms of what's changed since we were with you for preliminary site plan approval, which is why it's amended at this point, we have reduced the total number of units and the total number of buildings that we are seeking to construct, but we have increased the number of affordable units that we are proposing to construct. So we were previously approved for a total of 6 buildings and 146 units total, 55% of which were affordable. What we are proposing today is 4 residential buildings, all 3 stories. There'll be a community space that's attached to one of the buildings that we're proposing, and we're proposing a total of 96 units, all of which are affordable. So it's a decrease from 146 units to 96 units, 6 buildings to 4 buildings, and an increase in affordable units to now be 100% affordable. The bedroom distribution that's being proposed as part of the application is 16 one-bedroom units, 56 two-bedroom units, and 24 three-bedroom units. That complies with your zoning ordinance. I will note there's a discrepancy in our application that had a different distribution, but this is the figures that were included on our engineering plans and are what the applicant intends to construct, and again, it's what's required by your ordinance. I promise you, I'm not contagiously sick, but I have a cough that seems to come when I talk. My husband makes me test like every night. Don't breathe on me. We're located in the township's newly created Route 31 Highland Center, which means, among other things, that there's a new Highlands Environmental Resource Zone boundary, so we are no longer subject to the Highlands Prime Groundwater Recharge Area requirements. We are seeking some relief in connection with the application this evening. We're requesting a variance to permit a retaining wall of height in excess of 6 feet that is not tiered, whereas your ordinance requires, if you go higher than 6 feet, you need to tier. We are requesting a design waiver related to a 25 landscape buffer that's in your underlying ordinance code. We are complying with all of the setback requirements. You may have noticed in some of the memoranda from your professionals that they had noted that one of our buildings appeared to encroach within a setback, and you'll see an exhibit tonight showing that we've moved that building to get out of the setback. So we will be complying with that requirement. Additionally, we have a design waiver that we are seeking from your tree replacement requirement. While we are proposing to plant well in excess of 300 trees and large shrubs, your tree replacement ordinance would require us to plant more than 6,000 trees and shrubs, and we are not able to meet that standard, so we are seeking an exception from that requirement as well. And then we are also seeking an exception from some of your groundwater recharge requirements because of the karst nature of the land that we're dealing with. This evening testifying, we have John Hansen of ELNP, who is the project engineer and planner. He's going to give you an overview of the plans as they're proposed, the area that we're talking about, and also the relief that we're seeking and the justification for that relief. We have David Fahim of...
David who?
Fahim.
Can you spell it?
F-A-H-I-M from Atlantic Traffic. He's our traffic engineer. And we have Mary Johannesson of Now I'm doubting myself. Thriven or Thriven? Thriven. I've lost all my confidence.
Can you spell her last name?
Yes. J-O-H-A-N-N-E-S-E-N of Thriven. I was right the first time. T-H-R-I-V-E-N Design is the project architect. And she'll be testifying as well. We have received memoranda from a number of your professionals, including your planner, your engineer, your landscape architect, your lighting expert, and we also received an email communication from your environmental expert that we'll be addressing this evening. If it's acceptable to you, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have our engineer join me and be sworn, please.
Yes, let's get everyone who you mentioned that's going to testify. Let's get them all sworn. Everyone come on up, stand up by the table, and let's get all the board experts that are going to testify.
Mr. Drill?
Yeah, let's get Mr. Long.
I was just going to say, I don't intend to have Mr. Long testify,
just
but
in case.
Just in case.
Okay, and Mr. Long, spell your first name.
Jeffrey. G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y.
The Canadian version. Okay. Does everyone swear or affirm the testimony you're going to give in this matter over the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, start there?
Yes, I do.
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 Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, great. So, Mr. Hansen, now that you are sworn, I would ask that you please introduce yourself to the board and the public and tell them about your experience and credentials as both an engineer and a professional planner.
Sure. My name is John Hansen. Last name is spelled H-A-N-S-E-N. I'm vice president of Engineering and Land Planning Associates with offices in Highbridge. I've got a bachelor's degree in civil engineering from Virginia Tech in 1992, and since that time I've been working as a civil engineer in New Jersey in both private side and public side. I've done, hundreds or thousands, I should say, of site plan subdivisions, appeared about 1,500 times in testimony. I've represented about, 12 to 13 different boards as their expert, and my licenses are in good standing.
Thank you. Ask that you be accepted as an expert in engineering and professional planning, please.
Anybody have any
questions on his qualifications only? Anyone have any questions on his qualifications?
From anybody? If not, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Hansen, can you? Oh, I'm sorry.
Before you go, Mr. Drill, let's just try to. This is a public hearing, right? And so what we tend to do, I'm just trying to tell people, is if they, we'll give them time to talk, but after each.
Yeah, so after each witness testifies, they have the opportunity to question that witness.
Right.
Then when the applicant finishes all its witnesses and rests its case, then any members of the public who want to testify and give the board their opinions, their positions on things, will then do that.
Yeah.
Now, do we have a handheld mic?
I don't see one.
Okay, what we will do is when we...
We can give you one of those wired ones and...
I have one. There's two cable mics. I saw it. What happened to the other cable mic?
Here's another one, John. I don't know if it's in this one.
Well, actually, look. Here's the other one. What we will do. Once it settles in.
Hi.
I'm going to get
a chair or something.
There's a chair and a table. Oh, it's back here on the floor.
It looks nice, by the way.
Watch that cord. Watch the cord.
I'm going to bring it right over to the cord table like this. Put it just like this, wedge it in. Now, and we'll put, let's try one more time, sorry about this. Get this chair. So at the point where anyone from the public wants to ask any questions or wants to make statements at the very end of the hearing, looks at there and you have a cable mic and not the hand holder or anything like that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
And one last. I have a very loud voice. Some of these other guys are not like that.
Okay. Now that we're arranging, do you want Mr. Hansen to bring this with him when he's standing by the board and speaking?
You know, bring the board closer to the table.
Well, yeah, I wanted to keep it there so the public could see it. I have a pointer, so I don't get to sit right here and speak right into here.
You can use your pointer, that's wonderful. Yep. The other thing is, if your exhibits are part of your submission, they don't have to be marked. It will be a demonstrative exhibit. But if it differs at all from what's been submitted, then we're going to mark it.
We have a few to mark.
Okay. Do you know how many?
Well, I have at least three, and maybe additional ones, but for three for now.
Okay. Can you pre-mark the three right now? A1, A2, and A3, lower right-hand corner.
Okay. First one we're going to call A1 is entitled Spruce Run Apartments Site Location Exhibit.
Okay, hold on. Spruce Run Apartments Site Location Exhibit.
Mr. Hansen, is there a date on there?
Yes, it's dated today.
Okay, the 20th
yep.
of November.
Yep. And it basically shows the site at a scale of 1 inch equals...
Let's just get them identified. You can testify about each one later. So A1 is a Spruce Run apartment site location exhibit dated 11/20/23. Does it say that it's prepared by ELNP?
It does.
ELNP, yes.
Okay.
Okay, the next one, which is called A2.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Spruce Run apartment site rendering. That has also the same date, which is 11/20/2023.
And that's also prepared by ELNT?
Correct. And then A3 is just titled Exhibit. And that's dated today, 11/20.
Okay, it's an exhibit of what?
It's an exhibit of...
What sheet from the site plans is that?
It's a combination of the site plan sheet and then also a detail just showing how we're going to relocate and adjust the building so that we are variance-free with this.
Okay, so let's call it, and I want you to write this on it, before the word exhibit or on top of the word exhibit, building relocation exhibit. And I take it that this building relocation exhibit is going to show how the buildings have been relocated to get rid of those variances that Tom picked up in his report?
Correct. Yeah, I think we'll call it building three relocation.
Okay, building number three relocation exhibit. And that's dated today, 11/20/23?
Yeah, and prepared by ENLP.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you all. I'm glad we're getting organized. So, Mr. Hansen, I'm going to ask you to please orient us to the location of the property as it sits and the uses around it, please.
All right. So we're going to start out with Exhibit A1, which I have on the board here. And the project site is in the middle. You can see it bounded by dark boundary here. And this is, as Councilor said, this is Block 70, Lot 6 and 6.01. Lot 6 consists of approximately 11.237 acres. Lot 6.01 consists of approximately 0.843 acres. Both are located in the AH9 zone. And just to orient everybody, north is to the top of the sheet here. We have Route 31 going up and down from top to bottom. To the west, on the other side of Route 31, is Spruce Run Reservoir. To the north, I call it the northwest of our site, is the formerly attorney's office, which is, I think, recently approved by for St. Luke's Medical Center. To the north is the Hunter and Wellness Center. Those are both properties are in the C1 zone. To the out parcel here, that's kind of the horseshoe of our property around it. That's Lot 7. That's also an attorney's office or professional office. I think that's vacant at the current time. And then south of us, which is in C1 zone, is what I think is formerly the Clinton Nurseries property. That may also be vacant at this time. Across from the property on the east side or adjacent to it is residential zone, and that's the RR4 zone. And then we have the south branch of the Raritan River to the southeast of the property. So we front on that, and across the river is the RR-4S zone, which is residential zone. So as our counselor said, you know, the property is developed. 6.01 has the veterinary center, which will be removed. That property is served by public water and septic system. It's dilapidated. It's basically in need of to be redeveloped. The remainder of the balance of the property is a forested site. There's some constraints along the south branch of the Raritan River. And it's somewhat of an irregularly shaped property, as you can tell here. It's got the L shape to it. There is a unique topographic feature on the property. And in general, I'm going to bring up sheet three, which is called our demolition and tree removal plan.
So sheet three is a demonstrative exhibit because it's part of the site plan package and we're not going to be writing on it or anything like that.
That's correct.
Correct.
Yep. I just wanted to use this because it kind of shows how the property drains currently. And so in general, the property drains in an easterly direction. So away from Route 31, down to the river, which makes sense. And so, a couple things to note, and I think this is important as we go on with the testimony with the variance later, is that the first 500-600 feet is kind of generally sloping from Route 31. And then you can see here where the topo lines are closer together, it falls off, okay, and then kind of goes to another plateau, which then drains kind of slowly down towards the river. So that's somewhat of a unique feature. It's evident on the properties that are adjacent to it, but it's an important feature because we'll talk about that when we do our testimony on the variance. So our proposal is fairly simple. Now I'm going to bring up A2. So we had really four major goals when we were designing this project. The first was to design the site to comply with the AH9 zone to the extent that we could. Number two was to site the buildings in really the appropriate location. So we wanted to have far enough distance from Route 31 so that we could have some buffering and have the buildings right on 31. And we also wanted to put them in the appropriate spot to keep them away from the environmental constraints, which is closer to the river. So I think we did that. The other goal was that we really wanted to design the development to have the right blend of parking. Okay, so we're governed by the RSIS standards. We also have electric vehicle stalls that we need to put in, and we get credit for those. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But we wanted to get enough parking that we thought was practical, but also ask for some fenced parking so that we could keep as much green space as possible. And I'll talk about that as well. But you can see on A2, our green space parking is 14 banked parking stalls, 7 on each side, 1 on the north boundary and 1 on the south boundary. And then lastly, we wanted to design the driveway system such that, you know, the circulation throughout the site was appropriate, that it's safe and it's, you know, appropriate for emergency vehicles should they need to be access the site. So the project will consist of the construction of 4 3-story apartment buildings. Each has 24 residential units. Ms. Coffey talked about the bedroom distribution already. We'll have existing on-grade parking areas, which you can see through the rendering. We'll have 3 solid waste and recycling storage areas. And so those are shown with boxes here. They're 11 by 20. So we have 2 along the northerly property line and 2 along the southerly property line. We have 1 community center that's attached to building 3. We're designed and will reconfigure, as I'll talk about in another exhibit, a tot lot or play area for children, which is shown on this exhibit in a magenta color. And it's basically just to the west of building 3. We'll also have an outdoor patio just off of the community building. We have a brown box to the east of building 2, and that's our location of our pump station. It's a sanitary pump station. I'll talk a little bit more in details when we go into the utilities on that. And then, of course, we have associated lighting and landscaping and those things. So access to the site is going to be from Route 31. This is going to be a major access permit requirement from NJDOT. It's a right-in, right-out type movement. The access permit is pending from DOT. We will be constructing sidewalk to connect to the St. Luke sidewalk over here, and the sidewalk will come through our...
And you say to the St. Luke's?
To the north.
What is St. Luke's? What is that? That's a development that was approved by the Board of Adjustment?
Exactly.
But it hasn't been built yet?
Yes, exactly.
So what line has that been approved on?
That is...
Lot 12.
Yeah, I'm sorry, lot 12.
I think it appears to be block 70, lot 12. And while we're talking about that access, there was a comment about extending the access across the drive, and the applicant will agree to comply with that comment, just while we're talking access.
Yeah.
And so, we have basically our right-in, right-out with a concrete median, which is typical of what you see on the side of Route 31 in this type of facility. And so it'll come in, it'll be 36 feet wide from curb to curb. And then there was a comment in the reports that did we really need to have this as 36 feet from curb to curb all the way through this parking area here. And we looked at it again. We're actually going to neck it down to 30 feet and then neck it down again to 24 feet as we get farther east into the site. So we looked at that with our traffic expert.
All these sort of things, pick them up and you go through the reports just to...
We'll do. So that'll allow us to reduce some impervious coverage and still provide safe access to the site. So other things to note is that building one has been positioned so that the front of the building faces Route 31. We think that gives the development a good look from Route 31. And then buildings two and four both also face Route 31. And building three, the front of the building, the entrance faces building four. So what it does, it creates a nice courtyard effect here on the interior of this development. So the parking demand, we'll talk about parking here, is based on the RSIS standards, that's the Residential Site Improvement Standards, 192 parking spaces are required. And that includes ADA accessible spaces. Six of those are going to be ADA accessible. Recent law requires 15% of the required number of parking stalls to be make-ready electrical vehicle stalls. And those make-ready stalls, each one of them counts for two parking spaces. So when I sum this all up here, what we're proposing on site is to construct 177 physical parking stalls and bank 14 parking stalls.
For a total of?
Well, just stay with me for a second. So 30 of the 177 parking stalls will be make ready. So the total proposed parking per code is 207 without the bank stalls. With the bank stalls, we'll bring it to 221. So none of the bank stalls will have the electrical vehicle make ready. Now there was a question about where those make ready stalls will be, and they're going to be between buildings two and four. I'm sorry, between building one and two and building three and four. So they'll be against the sidewalk on those areas. All right, so each parking stall is 9 foot by 18, which is the typical industry standard. The ADA stalls will be 8 by 18. Each of the ADA stalls that we've designed are van accessible, which means that you'll have an 8 by 18 next to an 8 foot wide striped area. We have that on both sides, and we position them, so it's really the most efficient way to do it, in my opinion. Solid waste and recyclables. I pointed out where those were.
Mr. Hanson, I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that we have the parking count correct, and it could be that I'm mistaken because I'm not the engineer, but I had thought that we were at 177 physical spaces.
Right, but he's saying, tell me from your mind, if you have 177 and 30 of the 100 are make-ready, that means you get credit for an additional 30. So 177 plus 30 is
207.
You have 14 bank.
Yeah.
So 207 plus 14 equals
221.
All right. I did the math differently, but we got to the same place.
So not to complicate things, I think you get the 2-to-1 credit.
It's limited.
Up to 10%.
Correct. So right. the way I was doing the math. And I will tell you all, so again, take this with a grain of salt because I majored in history, but I thought that we were at 210 spaces that could ever physically exist, 177 on day one, 14 banked. Of the 177, 30 of those spaces are EV spaces. So the grand total of parking spaces is 191, which includes the EV and the banked. The RSIS requirement, sort of baseline requirement, my understanding, is 192. But then because you're allowed to get this double credit for up to a certain amount of your EV spaces, we're allowed credit for up to 19 of our EV spaces because it's 10% of your total parking and you have to round down. So 10% of 192 rounded down is 19. Everyone with me so far?
No, but that's all right.
Okay. I'm seeing so you're Tom's with me. All right. So you're allowed to get credit for up to 10% of your EV spaces can be double counted. You have, in the event that it ends up being with a decimal point, you have to round down. So 10% of 192 is 19.2, round down to 19. So the updated residential site improvement standard requirement, because you have this credit for some EV spaces, is the 192 minus the 19, which brings your requirement down to a total of 173. So to sum up, 173 is your parking requirement based on residential site improvement standards when you factor in the credit that you get for the EV spaces. On day one, the applicant's proposing 177 physical spaces, which includes all of the EV spaces, so we exceed the RFIS standard. But then to be kind of safe, we are banking an additional 14 spaces should we need them, but we didn't want to build those on day one to try to keep the green space if we can. So the upshot of all this math is we comply with your ordinance, we comply with residential site improvement standards, both with regard to the number of spaces, the electric vehicle requirement, and the accessible parking requirement.
Let me get this straight.
Yep.
So the updated RSIS requirement is 173 spaces, and because you have 177 physical spaces on day one plus 14 bank, under the ordinance, the bank spaces count towards providing spaces. So you're providing 191.
Correct.
14 of which will be banked, 177 constructed, and your requirement under RSIS is 173, so you're providing four more spaces than you were required to do.
Correct. Out of the gate.
I understand.
And the parking calculation table on the site plan, on sheet 6, shows that calculation.
Yeah.
The top of it.
What sheet?
6.
Thank you. Okay. So we're getting ahead of ourselves. So in your engineer's memorandum, he noted that there was a discrepancy with regard to the number of parking spaces that were shown, and he questioned whether it's 16 spaces or 17 spaces. We've confirmed it's 17 spaces, so it'll be the higher of the numbers. So we're still good. And we'll go back through it when we get into the memos so everyone's on the same page. But
we can
talk.
Are you saying that calculation?
Yeah.
They were like all good from the beginning. It was the rest of us that are struggling.
The trouble is here.
All right. I apologize for interrupting.
No,
I just want to make sure we're
glad we got to clarify.
The last time I was here, they had adopted this statute like the night before we were here, and we were all like, I don't know, we'll just comply with it. So we're in a little bit better shape than we were the last time. Okay. I'm turning back over to you.
Back to me. So
yes. We
were talking about solid waste and recyclable areas. So I had mentioned before that we have three, which we think are spaced appropriately. These are the number that we need. They're 11 feet deep by 20 feet wide, and they're constructed as split face blocks. Now the plans show that we have a maximum height of 8 feet. There were some comments in the reports that the maximum height really per the ordinance is 6 feet, so we have no issue to lower them down to 6 feet and comply with the ordinance. So still provide, you know, good barrier and good screening. It'll be constructed as split face block. We also have designed them so that, you know, the residents don't have to pull the big gates open and struggle with them. There's going to be a man door on the side of each one, so they'll be able to get in there, put their recyclables and their solid waste in there easily, and not have to toss it over the gate. So I want to switch now to utilities.
Oh, wait, before you go, just for the record, it'll be a private hauler handling the trash and recycling.
That's
correct.
Correct, yes. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Could there be a gate on the man door facing Route 31, since there's no gates shown on the detail?
A gate on the man
door?
Are you
asking, is it something we would agree to do, or are you asking, is that what's intended?
The detail shows no gates for the man, they're open, there's no door.
I think that we did intend to have a gate there, so there'll be a man door on
there. Okay,
yeah.
So they won't have gates.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so public water, public sewer, gas, and electric. So those are all available at the property. So I want to lay out kind of what's out at the site now and then how we plan to connect. So I'm going to go back to A1. Just talk about the utility. So,
hold on 1 second. Mr. Hanson.
I guess to Jim's point, he was asking for a man door or a gate on the man on the openings for standard access. The only concern I would have is as long as we ensure the gates are ADA compliant, because there are ADA spaces.
Add ADA compliant gates to all access enclosure openings.
Yeah, and the applicant. Yep.
Okay, so back to A1, which shows the overall site of existing conditions. So the project is in the sewer service area, and the project's also ability to serve by water. There's gas and there's electric out there. So currently what you have for water is there's a water main, I think it's either 8-inch or 10-inch, that runs along the east side of Route 31. It's along our frontage, so we plan on tapping into that. We'll provide a looped water system throughout our site, which is one of the comments by one of your professionals. We'll comply with RSIS standards. The town of Clinton, as you know, the water department provides the water, and we do have a water reservation. That water reservation is good until July of next year. So that covers the capacity there. And all the standard details, the town of Clinton requires the underground vaults, the meters, they'll all be in place. There's no hot boxes. This is not New Jersey American Water territory, so there's nothing above the ground. These are structures that are in the ground. Okay. Public sewer. So I'm going to go back to our A2 again. So for public sewer, this area of the township, you know, is a little bit difficult with respect to sewer, but we'll solve it. So on A2, along the frontage of Route 31, what's existing now is a 4-inch force main, and that 4-inch force main runs up from the Water's Edge development, which is farther north across the intersection to the northwest. And then that force main runs all the way down Route 31, across Route 31, and then it goes down into Halsted Road and then down into the town of Clinton sewer system. So what we're proposing to do is we're proposing to do a pump station be on the easterly side of our project. We think we've tucked it behind the retaining wall kind of nicely so it's out of view. And it's been designed or positioned in a location where we can not only serve our site, but it can also accept flow from the site to the north, which I talked about was the St. Luke's project. So
to the north or the south?
North.
So, and again, that's block 70, lot 12.
Correct. So, although not shown on this plan, our intention is to work with the owner of that site so that we can combine the flows into one pump station on our site and then have a force main that pumps it up and either connects into the existing force main that serves the Water's Edge community, which is owned by the CTSA, or either put a gravity in and do something else to get down into the flow into Halsted and then down to the town of Clinton.
Have you made contact with St. Luke's, or have they made contact with you yet?
We've had several meetings with them, and they're receptive to it. They understand the importance of it. And one of the main benefits here, frankly, is that if we can combine the two sites and one pump station, then the CTSA has told us that they'll take the pump station. They'll own and maintain it, okay, which is a big benefit. And so we're working in that direction. We expect that's going to happen.
And I have been on those phone calls with Mr. Long and with CTSA.
So I just want to kind of clarify. So I would say the owner of Lot 12 and the applicant are working toward this goal of a shared pump station. We're still in kind of the planning stages of making sure that it works the way that everybody wants it to work. If we can't make it work to include Lot 12, it still works for purposes of serving our parcel. If we can make it work to add in lot 12, and then we would, again, there's a comment coming up in the memo. So we would certainly size it appropriately to accommodate lot 12 if that's the case. And we expect that we'll know whether they're in or they're out for sure in terms of joining us as we're going through the resolution compliance process if we were to be approved. Just to give you a sense of the timing. Yes, sir.
Is the only downside if St. Louis doesn't join you that you guys end up owning and operating the pump? Is there any other downside to?
I think that's the main downside.
Yeah.
And that'll be the same downside to St. Louis.
And they'd have to do the same thing.
They have to do the same thing.
Right. So, I think everybody recognizes it's in our interest to work together, and we would like to. It's just now a question of coming at you precisely.
And the CTSA has brought individual force main connections into their facility.
So it's coming together.
So just to round out, gas and electric, fairly straightforward, underground utilities. Those utilities will have meter banks on the sides of the building. That's pretty standard on what we see for these types of construction.
Yeah, by the way, meter banks on the side of the building. Raritan Township has meter banks on the side of the building that you can see right from the highway. Do you have any idea where the meter banks will be on the outside of the building?
Yeah, we do show them, and I'm going to bring up.
We can all drive out there looking at them.
I know an applicant who tried to construe them as an art installation in a different community.
I don't have them, but basically what we're showing is the meter banks on building 3 would be on the east side, okay, but there'll be significant buffering, so you won't see them from Route 31.
You're saying the east side, but you're pointing.
I'm sorry, the west side. Thank you. Buildings 2 and 4 would both be on the east side. And for building 1, would also be on the east side.
I'm going to recap. So we're on the east side for 1, 2, and 3, which is towards the basin side of the plan, so to speak. And then for building 3, it's on the west side, which is the Route 31 tot lot side.
So you really can't see it from 31. Like that main built the first building there, it's not in the front of that building.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. If there's no questions about utilities, I'll go on to stormwater management. So stormwater management, this is what we call a major stormwater development. The reason being that the amount of disturbance is greater than 1 acre. The amount of impervious coverage or new impervious coverage is at or greater than 1/4 acre. And so we need to comply with the state regulations and the local regulations for major development. So what that means is that for a rate control perspective, we need to reduce the 2, 10, and the 100-year storms back to 50%, 75%, and 80% of the existing conditions. We also have to provide a water quality component. And then if possible, we need to infiltrate stormwater into the ground. So we're going to ask for a waiver for infiltrating for stormwater into the ground, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But we have basically three components of this system. It's a very elaborate system. It's expensive, but that's the way it is today. So we have done our water quality and our attenuation through use of porous pavement, which you see on A2, which are the darker parking stalls. Those will be porous pavement. Porous pavement looks just like regular conventional pavement, except that it has, it's called poorly graded aggregates, and so that the water will go through it. It acts like a filter down to a stone base underneath it, and then into a collection system that will then go down and go down to these two stormwater management basins. These stormwater management basins are what we call bioretention basins. Okay, so they have plantings in them. There's some suggestions from Jim about enhancing those, and we'll certainly do that as a condition of any approval. Also, we have this driveway area here, which is conventional pavement and doesn't drain directly to those porous pavement areas. So we have green infrastructure manufactured treatment devices, 6 of them, which will address the water quality off of
those motor vehicle surfaces, and then that again all drains down into the bioretention basin systems. So it's an elaborate system, like I said, but we believe that it meets the code for both the rate attenuation and the water quality. So the reason that we're asking for the waiver for stormwater infiltration is because, as you probably know, this is a carbonate rock area. We've had a geotechnical consultant do a phase two report. They've been out there drilling and providing results. And the bottom line is that the carbonate rock is somewhat high. There's not a lot of overburden over the top of it. And so in that case, the recommendation from the geotech is not to infiltrate stormwater because you have the potential for sinkholes. So we have lined everything so that you don't have that type of infiltration. We'll have watertight joints for the stormwater collection system, and we'll follow the recommendations, the additional recommendations from your professionals.
Which is the identified either the ordinance provision or the RESIS provision or whatever provision that requires the infiltration that you're seeking the exception from?
It's NJAC 7:8.
And I believe in your ordinance, it's
165-230,
section D, as in dog.
So given the NJAC, not just the 7:8, but it must have 8- et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that I'd have to get to. I don't know the sub number.
Okay. Someone eventually
gets it there. Yep.
All right, so the last three things to really talk about are lighting, landscaping, and signage. You know, we did get a chance to meet with Mr. Mizuko before we did the design. He was, you know, very willing to meet with us. And so what we did is we prepared a landscape plan that we think is appropriate for the site. It's got a mix of shade trees along Route 31 with additional buffer plantings mixed in with the shade trees. We also have shade trees lining, and I'm pointing to A2, by the way, shade trees lining both sides of the driveway coming in. We've got a significant amount of foundation plantings around each building, and then we've got buffer plantings on both the north side, the west side, and the south side of the property, you know, to enhance that and provide more screening to the neighboring properties. Now, that being said, there are a bunch of comments, and we'll go through Mr. Mizuko's letter, but, you know, in general, what we'd like to do is be able to work with him as a condition of any approval the board may give, you know, to enhance the landscape and fill in the gaps as and work with him on that. So the total number of plantings, just for the record, are 19 canopy trees, 90 evergreen trees, 239 understory trees and large shrubs, and 597 ornamental shrubs.
Okay, is that listed on some page of the plan?
Yes.
What page?
All right, so
that's something that I know that you're working with Jim for, especially screening along that neighboring side property line. But right now, that's where we have a concept for things. CPSA might have requirements for easements, and they might not want to see that area so heavily screened. So I think until you really hammer down your course main alignment,
yeah,
it might impact how much planting is going on there.
And my question also was, how is the St. Luke's site going to connect to this site? Does that come through that same area?
It's not shown.
Well, I mean, they have to work it out, but it's going to have to come.
Yeah.
Okay, so how... If this was an amended preliminary approval only, no problem. How do we address the fact that they're also here for final, and they're supposed to have the details, and that detail is missing?
Well, we'll get into those details, but this, I don't believe there's a plan right now for even the pump station location. It's just shown on a...
No, I understand.
Yeah.
So for preliminary site plan, no problem.
Yeah.
For finals, do you guys need this final site plan, or do you just need the preliminary?
We need the final, because we have to start to get ready to get our funding. So I guess my suggestion would be that we coordinate with the board's professionals as part of resolution compliance. We'd certainly represent on the record that, for example, the pump station would comply with all setback requirements and the ordinance, et cetera. And
what
then
about the buffering thing?
Well, we did redo the calculations. There was a comment in Jim's report about, you know, that we didn't take into the tree disturbance area, the forest main. So we recalculated. I have new numbers for that. You know, as far as the connection from St. Luke's, we can come up with what a normal path of the sewer line, what disturbance that would create, and we can build that into anything.
I mean, another option could be to reroute the forest main through the driveway. And again, this has to be hashed out with CTSA because they're going to have the responsibility for maintenance. Typically, you'd like to have those utilities.
But if they agree for now to put them in the driveway, okay, then you could grant final, and then if they have a problem later, they can come back for an amended final. But I don't see how the board grants the final without knowing, at least having them committing to now, where things are going.
I mean, they're going to have that easements given to CTSA to get from 31 back to the station.
In any event, right? They got to go to the pump station. That's going to be through the road.
The main is typically, if it's a collection system, that's going to be regional, more than one user, it's going to be public. So, not knowing exactly where that connection is to St. Luke's property, you would assume that the main would be taken over by CTSA, which would require an easement. So it might be less easement constraints on the property to combine everything into one area. Again, it's subject to CTSA.
So as you were speaking, I said almost the same exact words. So I think we're in alignment in terms of the path forward, and I'll say it out loud again so we're all on the same page. So the proposal would be that at this point, the applicant would propose to go through the driveway, and we recognize that this is subject to CTSA approval, and this is where you get into a little bit of the chicken and egg thing when, you know, did the local planning board approve it, did the CTSA approve it? So our proposal would be that we would ask the application be approved with based on the understanding that it would go through the driveway. If CTSA directs us to do something different, then we would return for amended final.
Yep.
Exactly right.
Okay, sewer lines to go through the proposed driveway subject to CTSA review and approval.
Yep.
Now, that takes care of that issue. Where are the water lines going?
Right now, the water lines also through the driveway, but it's only they have to show a loop connection for RSIS for this many units you need to have redundancy.
Yeah, so where's...
I would suggest that that could be installed probably somewhere. You would loop it, I would think, toward the north. You can stay out of the... I would think you would say out of the buffers for that, because I believe they're trying to save some trees on the south side. So you'd have to bring the loop back out to another wet tap on 31. So I would think more than likely you're going to loop that to the north, but I can defer.
So why don't you check with...
Yeah.
And I that's think exactly that's what we're doing.
So water line loops down the proposed driveway, and across up... north and along the northerly property line back out to 31.
Yeah, they need more than one source of water supply in case there's a main break. Yep. They're not shutting off 96 units of water.
Hold on, let me just write that down.
Make their notes and then we'll
outside the buffer.
I think you could make that work. I mean, I think, and yours are farther away, so you could even reroute the force main away from the buffer up again without having CTSA in your degree to that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. That's a practical solution to that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
So, on to lighting. So,
yeah, but back to the lighting. Other than the exception from
I report it, it didn't show the clear force main, but if the force main is rerouted
it's not a problem.
They might not, the clearing limits might remain as shown.
Okay. Right. And then I know that they mentioned earlier, and they're going to address it, the exception from the tree replacement,
yep.
But do they need any other landscaping exceptions at all based on these two conditions, that the sewer lines and the water lines are going down the driveway, and the water line loop is going to, after it goes down the driveway heading east, it's going to go north, and it's going to head west along the property line, but outside the buffer area. Do you guys think there are any other landscape exceptions that are necessary? Doesn't seem like it to me. I just want to check.
Well, the 25-foot buffers are asking for an exception from that in specific areas, not the whole site.
Okay, so right. Before you leave landscaping, let's do that right now.
Okay. So,
first of all, where is the 25-foot landscape buffer requirement found? What's the
Mr. Mizuko and I spent some time on this together today, in fact, because I was trying to figure it out. So, it's in your... It's not part of the AH9 zoning, right, which is why it's hard to find. So where you have to go is to 165-71 in the ordinance, and that sends you to 165-77C, as in cat, and that has a 25-foot landscape buffer. So we're all kind of oriented as we're thinking about this.
So now I'm looking.
Yep.
What sheet they were looking at, because I see the detailed site plan drawing 6 shows that we comply with the 20-foot side yard setback, but some of the buildings are fairly close, so I would think you're not going to be able to comply in some areas with the 25-foot. So where's the landscaping plan that says? 22.
So, if I may suggest, Mr. Drill, let us get into the building relocation first, and then we'll get into the landscaping, if that's all right.
Okay.
I think that'll help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have exhibit A3 up here, building 3 relocation exhibit. And so what we're showing is building 3, which is in the southwesterly corner of the site. So when we had the original plans that you reviewed and were submitted.
What sheet is that? The underlying sheet 3?
Yeah.
No, it's exhibit A3. But exhibit A3 is 6 by sheet 5.
The underlying sheet is 6.
Yeah.
6, okay.
So in the plans, it was noted by our professionals that the building 3, both on the southerly side yard setback, did not comply, and then there was an issue with the tot lot itself. So the reason that we had scooted it down was thinking that because the original setback, the old ordinance was 20 feet, we felt we had a little more room in order to give a little bit more buffer there between, a little more green space between the driveway and the community center. So all we have to do is scoot the building back up. It's about 8 feet, so we can comply with the side yard setback. The building will be set back 30.5 feet from building 3 to the side yard setback. And then we're going to reconfigure the tot lot and just use a little different equipment and a little different shape of the safety mat for that, and that'll comply with the 20-foot setback to the west. That'll still, it's important to note, that'll still give us a 2 to 3 foot setback between the face, the northerly face of the community center and the sidewalk as we proposed it, and then also have a nice little turf strip between the sidewalk and the road. So I think it's really the best of both worlds there.
But can you mention the top lot being 30 by 35?
It's going to be a little longer and narrower. We're showing it's probably going to be about 45 feet by about 23 feet.
Okay.
Okay, something to that effect. It probably will be a little bit of a polygon shape, but we'll definitely comply with the 20-foot side yard setback.
Now that we've talked about the building, let's talk about the 25-foot buffer for a minute before we finish. So the building is, so let me just back up. So you have setback requirements, which are part of the AH9 ordinance, and then there's the buffer standard, which is a design standard in your underlying code, which is the 25 feet. And so where it got complicated is your ordinance permits certain accessory structures to be within 20 feet, to have a 20-foot setback, but there's a 25-foot buffer. So that was where the rub was in terms of coming up with the plans, just so you know how it came about. There are a couple of items that are within the 25-foot buffer, but are not in the setback, which I will ask Mr. Hansen to go through in terms of what those are.
Yeah, go nice and slow.
We're going to go nice and slow. So I believe the first one is parking.
Correct. So
with the pointer, show where?
We're in the northerly, along the northerly frontage, or I'm sorry, the northerly sideline. We basically have about essentially 400 feet between the parking stall that's most northwesterly, closest to Route 31, and the building 2. That whole area there really isn't going to comply with the 25-foot buffer because of either the parking, the bank parking, the dumpster locations, or basically distance to the building that you need. You can't plant buildings or plant plants right up to the building. And then on the
So you just hit all of them at once.
The northerly side parking lot,
which is
including the bank parking spaces, and then including building 1 and building 2. Yes or no?
No. So it's, I'm gonna go slowly. You tell me if I have it right. So the parking that is parallel to the property line and to the west of building 1, there's, I think, 7 spaces along there.
At the 20-foot setback, therefore, 5-foot encroachment into the buffer.
Correct. Then, and I'm just going to kind of travel from west to east along the plan for the sake of clarity. So then,
Before you leave the first parking lot, the driveway width is 36 feet there. I know you talked about, I think you used the term necking it down. If it was less than 36 feet there, 30 feet, you'd have enough room to make the 25-foot buffer for that parking lot in the northwest corner.
Well, we're going to take the 36 down to 30, which would take 3 feet off of each side. Okay, so
we'll take 6 feet off.
Well, the 6... You know, these 6 feet off the total, 3 feet on each side because we want to comply with the 10-foot setback to the corner of lot 7 from the driveway. And so we will be able to pull that, as you said, farther south, but it's only going to be about 3 feet.
We'll be about 2 feet off. So
3 feet is half the distance.
Right. So where we'll end up is those 7 spaces, as well as there's a trash enclosure that's right there. Right now they're shown at 20 feet. Well, I think it's 20.5 feet. And so they'll end up being at 23.5 feet. And so the difference that,
Okay, so we're going to relocate.
Again, I majored in history, so other people stop me if I'm...
The parking lot here?
Yes. So the 7 spaces and the trash enclosure that are to the west of building 1.
We're relocating it 3 feet. How many feet to the south?
Three feet to the south.
3 feet to the south.
And so the expected setback for those improvements...
Instead of being a 5-foot encroachment, it's going to be a 2-foot encroachment.
Yeah, probably a foot and a half even. Okay. Yeah. Okay?
Hold on.
Yep.
Buffer encroachment. Okay.
All right. I'm moving again west to east.
Yep.
So building 1 is fully compliant because that's got more than a 30-foot setback. Then there's a parking section that's between buildings 1 and building 2.
Right. That's the northern bank parking area.
Correct. So that banked parking is, of course, proposed to stay green for now.
Yep.
If it were to be constructed, I think we're showing it at about 22 and a half feet from the property line.
Correct.
The trash enclosure is 22.44 feet from the property line.
Correct. And I think we're even with the trash enclosure.
Yep.
So the deviation that we're talking about there is another... approximately 2.5 feet, a little north of 2.5 feet, 2.6 feet for those improvements. And then I think that's it in terms of the extent of the waiver related to the buffer. So with the driveway modification, I'm summing up.
Just check the southerly banked parking area.
The southerly banked parking area, I'm with you.
There's no dimension on that.
There's no dimension on that. It looks pretty close.
It's 20.96.
So
have that's labeled on Exhibit A3.
To the
Exhibit A3 over here for a minute.
That's the 20-foot setback, and it's 0.96 on that.
Okay, so the southerly banked parking area is how many feet off the property line?
This one is on an angle, so it's not parallel to the property line.
That's
so
closest
point is 20.96.
Which would be an encroachment of how many feet into the buffer?
It would be four, a little more than 4 feet.
4.04. Okay, and that's the extent of the buffer encroachment, correct?
That is the extent of the buffer encroachments.
Tot lot and the basin are okay?
Tot lot and the basin are okay because with the modifications that are shown on...
The tot lot's still going to need relief because we're showing the tot lot at 20 from the side yard, which complies with the accessory structure requirement, however, not the buffer.
So the tot lot's going to encroach 5 feet into the buffer.
That's correct.
Now, what is on the lot to the west of the tot lot?
Yes. That's the attorney's, it's a professional office that's vacant at the time. There is some buffer back there. If you can see A3, actually it's probably better on here. If you look at A2, you can see, I'm pointing to the westerly side, there's a pretty significant buffer on that property. So combined with the buffer that we're going to give, you're talking probably about 60 to 70 feet of planting.
Yeah.
All right, and then now I'm doubting myself. The basins to the rear, what's our buffer there?
Okay, so we have a small little section, and I'll call it the northernmost section of Basin 1, as shown on A2, which does encroach into the 20-foot side yard requirement for accessory structures, of which a basin is an accessory structure. So what
It encroaches in the 20 feet, or it comes up to the 20 feet?
No, it actually encroaches.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. Is there any way you can move both of those basins south a couple feet to at least get it out of the side yard setback, but maybe can you move it, if you move there, let's say,
We won't move the whole basin, but what we'll do is we'll just reconfigure this so the polygonal shape will change.
Can you do that so it's not only outside the 20-foot setback, but so it doesn't need a buffer encroachment or not?
Yeah, we could.
So that would be a condition to reshape the northernmost basin to comply with the setback and the 25-foot buffer.
Correct.
The applicant agrees. Okay. I think that was a worthwhile detour.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we have covered landscaping, and I think yes.
You have to get to that exception for the replanting thing.
Yeah. So With the replanting thing, as Mr. Drill said, just to kind of frame it, Mr. Hansen testified in terms of the totals that are being proposed to be planted. My shorthand was that you've got...
Start with the ordinance provision that requires these two questions.
No problem. So, it's ordinance section 165-77D as in dog, which establishes the town's tree replacement requirements. And actually, a design waiver was granted from the standard as part of the preliminary site plan application as well.
What was the extent
of that exception, waiver, whatever you want to call it, that the board granted last time?
So I had in my notes from when we were last with you that we were proposing a total, well, that the requirement at the time in my notes was 8,500 trees. I now have that under the updated application, and I'm approximating because we're talking about a lot of trees here, that the requirement would be 6,500 trees.
Okay. 2,000 less trees.
2,000 less
because
trees.
Because you eliminated two buildings.
Correct.
And a bunch
and,
of...
And the community building as well by combining it. So our... The amount of trees that we were required to plant under the ordinance from when we were here 2 years ago versus now has gone down by 2,000. And also, when I was last with you, so the number of ornamental shrubs stayed exactly the same, which is kind of remarkable. It was 597 when we were here a couple years ago. It's 597 now. We had approximately 250 trees and large shrubs that we were proposing when we were here for preliminary. Our grand total of trees and large shrubs now is 348. So it's approximately 100 more of the trees and large shrubs than when we were here for preliminary before. So we're narrowing the gap, but it's an awfully big gap to try to accomplish because of the wooded nature of the site today. And the improvements.
By any chance, do you have the resolution there with you? Could you remind the board of reasoning and granting the exception last time?
I just bear with me for 2 seconds. Yep. Hang on. Pardon me? Do you know where it is in here? If you have it all teed up, you can... That's where I'm working on. Hang on.
Here. 4, paragraph 4.
Oh, you... Okay.
So the bottom of page 2, the board's finding as to this section are as follows. Since you're not, okay, well, I'll read it.
Okay. Is he one I can or you can? Either way.
We'll save your voice.
Okay.
First, the board finds that the literal enforcement of the ordinance for planning that issue will exact undue hardship because of certain peculiar conditions of the property. Specifically, the board notes and finds that the applicant must construct a particular number of market rate and affordable housing units as part of the proposed development in order for the township to satisfy its third round Mount Laurel affordable housing obligation. And as such, as a result, there's insufficient space to replant the extensive number of trees required for the ordinance. The difference now is that less trees need to be replanted. The board finds that the unique shape of the property in conjunction with the nature, size, and scope of the proposed development will result in undue hardship if the literal requirements of the ordinance were strictly enforced because it would inhibit the extent to which the property can be used. Finally, the board finds that granting the exception will be reasonable and within the general intent and purpose of the provisions for site plan review under the circumstances because the applicant has stipulated to planting trees to the extent feasible and subject to the satisfaction of the board landscape architectural expert. That's the applicant's attorney just actually stated into the record 597 ornamental shrubs were proposed last time, they're still proposed. 250 trees and shrubs were proposed last time, now 348 trees and shrubs were proposed. So if the board wanted to grant this exception, the identical reasoning could be used.
Just a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading the ordinance here. You said D. I think E is the reforestation.
Oh, I apologize.
No, it's reforestation. It's not tree replacement.
It's not reforestation. This is tree replacement.
D is preservation of individual tree existing into. Am I in the wrong? 16577. Am I looking at the wrong thing?
Yeah, that's right.
You're right. You online or are you in the book?
I'm online.
Oh, you're right. D is preservation. Sorry.
And so which section are we looking at to replace them if it's not reforestation, what sections are you looking at?
Okay. Yes, he took that from the resolution. Maybe the resolution is wrong, but the resolution said 165-77D, which requires large trees greater than 16 cubic feet, shall be replaced by a tree of similar caliber and may be replaced with multiple smaller caliber trees at a 2-to-1 ratio. Is that not in 77D5, right?
D5, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, how you came up with the 4,000, how many trees are you taking out?
So, Mr. Hanson, I'll let you explain the process of the sample size and then extrapolating.
Yeah, so basically, instead of counting every single tree on the property, we took a 100-foot by 100-foot area, okay, which came to 273 trees, and then multiply that.
DBH.
Sorry.
So a little pop. Hang on. Let's explain what DBH is so people.
Diameter of breast height.
For those of us who don't speak tree every day. Yep.
And then you take the entire tree removal area, divide it by that.
How big is the tree removal area?
It's 241,858 square feet, and that's without including the force main disturbance that we talked about, because we're moving the force main under the pavement. So the number that's shown in Mr. Mizuko's letter is correct. Okay, so you do the math, and you come up with 6,584.76 2-inch caliper replacement trees would be required per your ordinance.
And the other thing I had said last time, it's not in the resolution, I said, because the board made its exception determination under the traditional standard for exception, but there's Council on Affordable Housing second round rules and third round rules that the courts are using. And in those rules, specifically the third round rules, which the New Jersey Supreme Court said use the prior round, which is primarily round two, but then it had a section in the not law four opinion that said you should also look at the third round rules that have not been invalidated. One of the third round rules that was not invalidated was NJAC 5:97-10, cross-generation, and under 5:97-10.02A3, it says that the municipality shall give special attention to eliminating excessive, I'm not going to say this stuff that doesn't apply, tree replacement and reforestation requirements. And this is not simply a 20% inclusionary project.
100%.
This is 100% affordable housing project. So if this ever, you know, has to be considered, this is the case.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yep. No problem. All right.
Lighting.
Are we ready to go to lighting? We're going to lighting. Okay.
So we've got both site lighting. And we've also got some building-mounted lighting. Our architect will talk about the building-mounted lighting. But in summary, this is your state-of-the-art LED-type lighting. It's a shoebox-type fixture, so it's going to shine the light down on the pavement surface where it belongs, not up in the sky. They're not angled. It's designed the way it should be. So each of these site lights will be 16 feet in height, which is the maximum allowed by ordinance, section 175-74B. The foundations will extend the maximum of 2 feet above grade, which is, again, what your ordinance requires. The illumination levels, you have a minimum foot candle requirement coverage over the area of 0.2 foot candles, which we meet. You have a maximum average of 2.5 foot candles per your ordinance, and we have a design that has 2.3 to 2.4 foot candles as an average. So we think that the lighting meets the intent of your ordinance. there can be some minor adjustments if we need to. We do plan on having the lights dimmed after 9 p.m. Okay, that was something that was a question in the board professionals' reports. And then there was also a question of can we hold back the temperature of the lights. So the higher the temperature, you know, the more white it is and the brighter it is. So there was a recommendation. There's a little conflicting information in the reports. One was 3,000 Kelvin, one was 3,500 Kelvin. So we can pull it back to 3,000 Kelvin, which is the lower of the two, and meet that requirement. So if there's any other questions about lighting, we can move on to signage and then talk about the variance.
Just in terms of the building-mounted lighting, do you have any specs on that in terms of lighting?
Yeah, that's another, it sounds silly, but it's not. If it was preliminary approval, not a problem, but we're if we have a so final approval, so what do we do about that?
Our architect's going to talk about it, if we can table the building-mounted lighting until she testifies.
She did say the maximum height would be 16 feet as well, but she'll give you the details.
I don't want to change, make sure we get the process, but there's other points that were in, like the landscape.
Oh, they're going to go over
all. We're going to go through all the memos.
That's fine.
Yeah. It's coming. Yep. I promise.
Yeah, because you're catching a lot of it now, which is good. But
yeah. Yeah. No, we'll be as deliberate as you would like to be. Yep.
Okay. Then finally, signage. We have some building-mounted signs just for identification purposes and emergency services purposes. Our plans currently don't show a freestanding sign. You've probably noticed that when you were reviewing them. But we do intend to have the same freestanding sign, exact same dimension, same style. That was per the preliminary approval.
In the same place?
In the same place.
Okay, so if that's the case, if this is an amended, then as long as we say that the freestanding sign is going to be as initially approved, that's kind of get around that issue.
Yep, okay. And that's the plan.
All right, so let me look at my notes to catch up with what I just said.
And that was compliant with our...
Yes,
right. It's a 24 square foot maximum, and that includes the base and the sign face.
Yep.
All
right, and then
just pass.
Okay, and so just to wrap up signage, on sheet 33 of our plans, we show the building-mounted signage for each of the buildings. And so what it amounts to is a...
sheet 33? Oh, you show the sign. Okay. Then detail 5 shows it with respect to sign.
Yes. I was going to explain them in testimony.
Do the plans show where these signs are in the building?
We don't show the spot of the exact signs. You know, let me go through it and see if there's questions. Okay. So each building will have a 24-inch by 24-inch number sign, 1, 2, or 3.
The detail shows 24-inch by 30-inch.
Mr. Joe, I think you're looking at the second sign. We're talking about the first sign. It's just a number.
Ah, got it. The number sign. Okay.
Yep. So it's.
Yep. I see it.
Just a number.
So that would be positioned in a spot that you could see it as you enter the site. Okay. So yeah, we'll show those in appropriate location, but they'll be somewhere where you have to see them as you drive in. And then the other sign on the building will be the detailed unit numbers, and that's the 30-inch by 30-inch sign.
30 by 24.
I think we have 30 by 30.
It says 24 by 30.
30 by 24. Okay.
For the building unit sign. And the clubhouse sign is 12 inches by 6 feet.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that clubhouse sign, I would imagine we could, you know, determine the location of that would be on the northerly side of the community building, where the main entrance to the community building is.
Yeah. We're just gonna. Because normally, it's shown on the plan, so Tom would say, yeah, this complies, that complies, and this is a problem. So read the section to them that we're showing.
I'm reviewing section 165-109M1. which pertains to signage in residential districts, which the A9 zone is. And it allows for one wall-mounted sign per building for the purposes of identification, not to exceed 8 square feet. So in terms of the building number signs, that appears to be compliant. Okay.
If you add the unit number sign, which is 5 square feet, 24 by 30, plus the 24 by 24, which is, let's say, two times two is four, you get 9 square feet.
Right, but you only have one. Let me just ask you, do you have to have these separated? Can you make them into one sign?
We can make them into one sign.
You make them into one sign, you comply with the ordinance.
Yep, we can do that.
You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Right. See, they have, for 1, 2, 3, 4, they got this big 1, 2, 3, 4,
yeah.
Then they have the,
I'm looking to see if there's,
we just want to see if there's any way to leave it like that, or if they have to put it together, because it would be much better than having to apply the sign.
Keep going, Alan.
I'm going to keep on looking.
Okay.
But for now, we'll say...
We're fine to combine them so they comply. So we'll be combining the information... Yeah. That is shown, I'm just doing this for the sake of the record, combining the information that is shown in the first two signs on sheet 33 of the applicant's plans, going from left to right, combining that information.
So that there's one sign for building instead of two.
Correct. And it was the sign would include the information from both of those signs, but on a single sign with dimensions comporting with the zoning ordinance.
Boom, you got it.
Okay. Now, give me a second to write down what I just said. Yes, sir.
So, if you're going to change it to one sign, similar to the one that's in the middle, are you going to require two signs?
No.
Well, because one sign per building here says units 301 to 312, like 24 units in the building.
So the sign would have to say instead units 301 to 324,
right.
For example.
Have an
arrow. Yeah.
And have an arrow going the other way.
Okay.
They can do this.
Okay.
Yeah, it can be done.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
The ordinance section that we have to comply. One section is 165-109M.
M is in Mary. Okay. So that's signage. I think where we're going next is to talk a little bit more about the relief that the applicant's requesting, and then we'll get into the review memos, if that works for everybody in terms of a path forward.
Okay.
All right, variances.
All right, so I have sheet 7 of the site plan set, so this has not been altered, no need to mark it. This is the grading plan. And so I wanted to first show where the proposed retaining walls are. So we have a retaining wall that wraps around the southerly and the easterly side of building 2, and a separate retaining wall that wraps around the northerly and the easterly side of building 4. And so, as I mentioned in my intro, it's that there's a unique topographic condition on the property, and right essentially where building 2 and building 4 run is where that unique topographic condition is. And so, for safety purposes, in order to get around the buildings and have a level area essentially around those buildings, so you can get a ladder or something up there, it has to be essentially flat, and you need to either grade it down, which would require a lot more disturbance, or you do a retaining wall. And so we chose the retaining wall. This would be a structural retaining wall. It would be a manufactured block type wall, a tasteful block that would match the color and the style of the units here. The maximum height of the wall is right in this corner here. This is according to the southeast corner of building 2. And the maximum height of the wall there is 11 feet high, okay? And then when you add a safety fence, which needs to be along the entire wall system of 4 feet, that combination for your ordinance is how you measure the height. So 11 plus 4 gives you 15 feet height. Your maximum height for your ordinance is 6. So there's a total run where we're over 6 feet of 430 feet. So it's essentially
both of these walls except for the last few feet of the walls where they tie back into grade there. Okay, so this is really, the variance is what I would call a C1 type hardship variance. And so the positive criteria and the negative criteria need to be met. The positive criteria is found if it's a reason by exceptional narrowness or the shape of a property or by unique topographic condition, such as we have here, creates the hardship.
But you could get rid of this problem by grading and by disturbing a lot of the properties.
Yeah.
Meaning you don't have C1 hardship because you can do something about it. Maybe go with a C2, flexible C, benefit that way the detriments, because with all the additional grading and disturbance, you'd have to take out even more trees, yes?
Well, we're going to talk, we could build the both in a C1 and C2, but the negative criteria is that it needs to be comply with no substantial detriment to the zone plan, the zoning order, or the public good. And so I think there's parts of the C1 where the amount of disturbance, the lack of disturbance, okay, speaks towards the public good. In either case, if you chose the C2, again, there's, I think it's purpose G that talks about appropriate space and appropriate locations for the environmental considerations. That meets the positive criteria in that case. I think there's elements of the C1 and the C2. But at the end of the day, I think it's clear, at least it is in my mind, I think you should feel comfortable that the negative criteria is met and that there's no substantial detriment to the zone plan, the zoning ordinance, or the public good. We've got a tasteful wall. It's going to limit the amount of disturbance. It's not going to be visible from Route 31. It's not going to be visible from the adjoining properties. It can be buffered with landscaping if necessary, and it really just limits the amount of earth movement and disturbance on the property.
One more question for you. Why couldn't you do, instead of one 11-foot wall, why couldn't you do one 6-foot wall and one 5-foot wall, you know, with the requisite space apart? I assume you're going to say because that would be more disturbance again, but is that why?
Well, it's one of the reasons, but you also don't want to tier walls where you have the second wall is in fill. Okay, because then you basically have to build that wall down to a firm soil anyway. So you know, to build tiered walls and hold a building up like you're showing here, you really need to do it with one structural retaining wall of either a big block type wall or a wall with geogrid.
Don't ask Larry about that. Go with a C2, less disturbance.
You just have to
assess the safety factor with if you had an 11-foot high wall and you have a kid up on top.
So the safety fencing is proposed as part of the fencing. And Mr. Hansen testified about that. There's a 4-foot safety fence that's being proposed at the top of the wall. And then going back to the C2 criteria, Mr. Hansen, again, it's less disturbance from a soil movement perspective. It's allowing us to keep more of the wooded area. As we know, we have a bit of a gap in terms of the tree replacement requirement and what we're able to plant. And then also, I would imagine, from a cost-generative perspective, it would be more expensive to tier the wall as opposed to building a single wall, correct?
Yeah, all of that's correct. And it should also be noted that in Mr. Mazzucco's report, he also suggested that we add some netting at the bottom of the fence to further provide a safety enhancement, you know, so we're agreeing to do that too. So this will be a safe situation.
Right. So if I'm seeing the back of the building on ground level, which is, and I look down, is there any wall above the plateau and then 4-foot wall, 4-foot fence, or is the wall terminating at ground level and all I see is 4-foot fence?
It's the latter.
So I think that might be a real question. I
really should say it's 4-foot. Because 4-foot fence, kids in the wall on top of that.
And then it's 15-foot.
So 15-foot problem.
Yeah. I think the applicant's happy to make the fence higher if necessary.
I believe that Jim's memo suggested having a vinyl-covered mesh, non-climbable fence on the building side of the split rail so a kid couldn't climb up the rails, but
It's a typical detail. We also use pool enclosures, so that's what's considered non-climbable. The size of the opening has to be a certain minimum dimension.
It's 1 inch max.
Inch and a quarter.
Yeah.
What size is non-climbable by a kid?
Well, I mean...
Well, there's minimum fall protection standards, right? But then there's the practical. No, I
just. Yeah. So yeah. No, it's up to you. Right. You could say that you'd want it higher than 4 foot 4 inches if you want. The higher you go under your theory, the higher the kid's going to climb over the non-climbable fence.
Do you guys want to?
Yeah, I'm not comfortable. I'm concerned that somebody's going to go over top there.
But back to the point of it, if they can climb up the fence, I'm not arguing one way. What do you want? A higher fence?
A higher fence.
They can still climb it, though.
Well, the smaller kids, right, can climb the little mesh things, but you have to ask yourself, you know, if you have a 2 or 3 year old, or a 3 year old might be able to get his or her little fingers in there, but as a parent,
if we think we want it a little higher, that's
yeah.
I mean, so I'm gonna throw out a number, and everyone can tell me where, like, with a 6 foot fence with the non-climbable mesh.
That sounds more. That's
what
the typical. Like, what's a typical pool fence?
4 feet.
4 feet. 4 feet. But 6 feet is a typical. I mean, what I've seen around these detention basins,
yeah,
6 feet.
Yeah, maybe 6 is more.
Yeah, that was the applicant's fine to do that.
One more comment. You said before that you can't see this. The neighbors can't see this. Is that even from the backside?
Well, if you were standing in the, you know, where our detention basins are, you would see them. Let me pull up A1 again.
Right. I'm thinking like from property lines more than in on the property.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we're standing on the easterly property line. If you wanted to stand there and look at the site, yeah, you're going to see the wall. But from somebody's house, I don't believe you'll see it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking more of any like residential houses down there. No, right.
Hang on, because there's a lot going on. So, Mr. Chairman, you're asking about the residential properties that are to the southeast of the parcel, bordering like the southeasternmost border of the property. Those folks, Mr. Hansen, I believe, are going to be so far. Those residences down there are going to be so far from the walls that I would imagine they'd have a hard time seeing it, correct?
Is this putting a scale on it?
Yeah, just hold on a second. Look,
go ahead, Mr. Hansen.
Hang on.
Putting a scale on this, the nearest house is on the other side of South Branch, is about 900 feet away.
Yeah. It's a pretty good distance.
And you're looking through vegetation that of 700-800 feet of vegetation that's going to remain.
What the board professionals are kicking around is why even do the split rail? Normally you do a split rail for aesthetic reasons. If no one can see the split rail, forget the split rail. Just go to 6 foot high, non-climbable, black vinyl covered, chain link, non-climbable between mesh from 1 inch to 1 1/4 inch openings.
It's fine.
I think so. Okay. So that's acceptable to the applicant.
Okay.
So that's the retaining wall. That's the only variance that the applicant is seeking. We do have some design waiver exceptions that we've talked about kind of as we've been going along here. I'll let you get set up, Mr. Hansen.
Well, we we talked about the waiver for the side yard buffer, 25-foot side yard buffer.
We've done that, beat that to death.
And we also did the tree replacement.
Right, you did that to death.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the waiver for the strict compliance with the infiltration of stormwater.
Yeah, we haven't beat that one to death yet.
So let's beat it to death.
Yep.
So
let me see it back. So the ordinance section that we're talking about again is 165-230D, as in dog. And
we'll get me the NJAC.
And we'll get to the NJAC. It may even be referenced in the 165.
Exactly,
yep. Yeah, but we'll get it to you either way. So, Mr. Hansen, this is definitely not for history major, so I will let you take it away.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, as part of due diligence and requirements, Digneo Engineering, which is a geotech engineering firm, went out there. They did a physical investigation, drilled holes throughout the site, find the depth of the rock, and find out what type of rock it is. So as expected, this is carbonate rock out here. And it's at depths that are relatively shallow compared to the existing grade. And so the recommendations in the report for our discussions with Digneo Engineering was that you shouldn't infiltrate stormwater into the ground, which is no surprise. This is a common thing when you have this type of situation. So in this case, it's a safer situation to not infiltrate the water, to seal up the bottom of the detention basin, the porous pavement sections, and the like, and also have our storm conveyance structures to be watertight piped. So it makes a lot of sense. It's a safety issue. It's consistent with the recommendations in this report, and that's why we're asking for the waiver. There's no detriment. All the water is going to flow down towards the stream like it does now. There'll be no impact to neighbors or anything like that.
Is everybody good to go to the memos? Well, okay. I was going to suggest that we start with a memo from your engineer, if that's acceptable to everybody. Give me a second.
There.
I want mine with my highlighting.
Okay.
So just so we're all following along, we're working off of a memorandum that was issued by Mott McDonald that has a date of November 20th, 2023. And I'm going to say the...
Okay, which of the lot? Larry's and we have Layton.
I'm looking at Larry's to start. Okay. I thought we'd start with engineering since we've got engineering, and then we'll go from there. Okay. I'm going to start with Section B, policy issues. The applicant will comply with all of the requirements in policy issues. Many of them are comments that you typically see. Some of them are regarding plan updates.
Put it this way.
Yep.
Applicant's going to comply with...
We're going to comply.
Right. Next section.
Okay. Now I'm into Section C, which is technical comments. It starts on the bottom of page 3. The applicant will comply with all of the comments in Section A. There's a subsection A, so it just goes C1A. We'll comply with all of those comments. In Section C1B, I just wanted to clarify, this is where the parking discrepancy shows up. So what was observed in the memorandum is that in the parking stalls that are to the west of Building 2, there's a number on the plans that says there are 16 spaces.
You agree with the comment, you have to resolve...
It's going
to
be 17. I can do better than say we have to resolve, or it's going to be 17.
As drawn,
not by the number.
As drawn, correct.
Before we go further, I just noticed something that was not picked up before, and it kind of relates to policy items, or I guess letter J, for the conservation.
Mm-hmm. And the applicant agrees to the conservation by the
way. Yeah, I was looking at the sheet 4 that shows the environmental constraints.
Uh-huh.
Everyone has this available to me. You can see there's a...
Which
sheet 4. This is the overall area and constraints plan.
Mm-hmm.
There's a flood hazard area limit line that's shown on this plan.
What color?
That's the red line.
Red line?
And it shows...
It's a faint line. It's like in the...
It's probably contour 2005. I think that should be following contour 2003, because 2005 contour is actually within the area of fill. And I just double-checked the FEMA flood maps, and I believe the base flood elevation is 202 in this area with the 1 foot freeboard, it's 203. Because if you go to some of the other sheets, it looks like there's a heavy line following the contour 203. So I just think we've got to make sure that flood hazard area line is actually 203 and not 205.
Yeah, we'll show that accurately. We have to get a flood hazard verification anyway. So we're planning on...
If the board approves this, what do I do?
Well, I think they're going to get a verification from DEP for the flood hazard area line.
That's our plan.
So I think the applicant will agree to revise its plans to comply with the flood hazard, flood water hazard area determination.
Flood hazard by DEP included in the policy issues.
It would be part of Jay, because Jay basically takes any environmentally constrained areas and makes it a conservation issue, including your flood hazard line. So whatever.
Give me a sentence to add to Jay.
The conservation easement line will follow environmental constraint line as approved by DEP. So i.e. wetlands lines, flood hazard area lines, riparian buffers. And I think they're going to come back and say the 203 is accurate, which it takes the basin out of
the bill.
Sometimes it's hard to make here in the conservation. The township really can't be touched and all of that stuff.
It would be, and I asked for markers, somehow delineated, corner markers, something. Yeah, it would become conservation.
The language is agreed with the township for any more.
Yep, and I got a comment about sending draft easement documents to be reviewed and needs to
know.
Okay.
All right. I'm going back to section C1B as in boy.
Yep.
We just talked about B1.
Yep.
The remaining comments in B, the applicant will comply.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now I'm in C1C.
Yep.
The one we wanted to clarify there was the number 3, which is the total number of spaces. It's going to be 177.
Go back to 2. 2 is the same comment as 1 from above.
So 2 is the same comment as 1 above, right? So it's 17 spaces.
Yes.
And then what follows is for comment number 3, it's 177 spaces. Because it was all same issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then on C4, we have talked about CFAR, which C4, which is with regard to the bank stalls, and we have confirmed that they comply with the 20-foot side yard setback.
Right.
Yeah, so just...
Okay.
And then the only comment in C we haven't talked about is C1, which we will comply with. Then the applicant will comply with all of the comments in C1D as in dog, E as in Edward, F. I want to just note we talked about F, comment F1, which is related to the coordination with Lot 12 on the sewer, and we are continuing to coordinate with them. And if we're able to get those details to align, we will be sizing the...
Yeah, I'm going to rewrite F1 to be four lines going down the driveway.
Perfect. Thank you.
This isn't just for the force main, though, John. This is for gravity connection.
Okay, so where are those?
Sasha. I would believe that if St. Luke's property, that adjoining lot
12,
is going to connect to the pump stations, they're going to do it by gravity. That's not shown on this plan, on that coordination.
Right.
But we can show it as a condition of approval.
They may have to come back for an amendment, but what can they do about that?
Right.
That's not part of their project.
But you don't want to have them come through and rip off improvements that are built. I would think it's a benefit for everybody.
So What we're proposing is, as part of our resolution compliance, either we will advise whether St. Luke's is in or it's out, and we will only build in accordance with...
Or if you leave them a stub somewhere out of pavement area where they can connect to, but something, I mean, it's just, you don't want to pave a driveway or build sidewalks and
We're going to know by the time we get to resolution compliance, and we're going to show that on the plan.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
That was basically that statement, is just trying to inform the applicant just to include a future build-out and connection.
Okay. The applicant will comply with the remaining comments?
Which actually said the applicant noted on there's a note on the plan saying that they're providing sewer to Lot 12. It's on the utility plan, I believe, where it specifically states that, they have a note saying proposed pump station will serve subject property and may also serve adjacent property to north block 712. Pump station design and connection to the existing sewer to be coordinated with CTSA. So it makes a reference, it says may, but it's alluding to the fact that this is going to be a CTSA pump station, and the only reason the CTSA is for this 41
Okay.
All right, let me keep going.
Yep.
So we're going to comply with the remainder of section C1F, which includes the requirement about doing the water main loop. Mm-hmm. The applicant will comply with all of the remaining comments in the memorandum. If you want me to break them out by letter, I can, but we'll comply with all the rest. G through M is in Matthew.
Okay.
So that's the engineering memorandum, and then if it's acceptable to the board, next we thought we would go to the memorandum from Burgess Associates, your planner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is a memorandum that's dated November 15th, 2023. Hang on. So.
This one. Burgess memo dated November 15, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Tom
Barron. Correct. So, I'm on page 3 is where the comments really start, I would say.
If you want, there are less conditions and more comments.
So yeah.
Maybe correct. I can expedite this.
Sure.
It looks like item 2 on page 3, you are showing the Highlands Environmental Resource Zone boundaries. I just missed that. So I acknowledge that utilities have been addressed. Your architect will address building design, how it relates to the township. Parking and circulation address. Sidewalk issue address.
That's that.
Sidewalk,
yeah.
They agreed. So that's going to be a condition.
Yeah.
Regarding the extension
of
the driveway.
So how's this one? Disconnected.
That's on your exhibit. I think you got that.
We didn't show it, but we agreed to do it.
So I'm going to make this, that will be a condition. Sidewalk shall be continuous in this location.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, landscaping, lighting, signage. I think that's it. You resolved the number of the non-compliant items that I identified.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have no further
comments. Okay. Thank you.
Item number 6 is the only condition that you have said.
Okay.
All right, next I'm going to go to the landscaping memorandum, but you have to give me a minute. Oh, right here. Perfect.
That's so, point of clarification.
Yes, sir.
Tom Barron, your memo, page 5, highway, minimum side yard.
So they're adjusting that southerly building number 3,
not eliminating it.
Right,
but. Yeah, I just want to point that out because it's in the report and we didn't
specifically call
that out.
Yes, thank you.
The document's been addressed.
Right, so mm-hmm. Building 3 will comply with the minimum 30-foot side yard setback requirement.
Correct. And as shown on Exhibit A3.
Number 1 in compliance. Page 5.
Yep. Next, I'm going to the memorandum received from Mr. Mazzucco at Gosenberg, dated November 17th, 2023. Comments begin on page 2. So some of these you touched on in testimony. I'm just going to go through them quickly. Comment number 1, as was testified, the wooded area to be removed is the 241,858 square feet. I think we've covered comment A2, which was regarding the tree replacement, and that has the calculation from Mr. Mazzucco regarding the replacement requirement, which is at 6,584.76.
Yeah, comment 3, they look back to request for relief on that.
No, number 3, I did go out today and I measured those two trees. So the one larger tree has been cut down. It's a 40-inch stump. Okay, and then the other one's a 28-inch diameter tree.
Okay. 4 we've covered. That's regarding the replacement trees. 5 was whether a sign is proposed on the site. We've covered that. There's one ground sign proposed, as was approved as part of the preliminary application, and we've also had testimony on the wall signs proposed. Then we're up to comment A6. This is regarding the width of the entrance drive. As Mr. Hansen testified already, the intention is to... Why don't you recap that?
I need something to put in that. I need to make that into a condition.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the plans will be revised. I'm going to pull up. Let's pull up A2 again. Okay, so at the intersection with Route 31, we have two 15-foot wide traveled areas, and then we have a 6-foot wide median. Okay, so that measures 36. So we carried the 36 on this design all the way down through past the first parking field, which would be to the north. So after further consideration, we're going to start to neck this down.
We're going to taper it down?
We're going to taper it down.
The revised plans to taper driveway down from 36 feet wide to what?
30 feet wide.
And at what point?
We'll start that. We'll start tapering it after the concrete median, and that'll...
Yeah, I'm going to say to the satisfaction of...
We're in consultation with our traffic
engineer and our landscape.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's further tapering, correct?
Well, that's going to taper down to the 24 that's
shown.
And then taper down 24 feet... As shown on plan, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how does that sound to both of you guys? Okay.
Okay. Comments 7 through 9, the applicant will comply with. Comment 10, we had testimony, there will not be a hot box required because we are not dealing with New Jersey American Water. Comment 11 is regarding the safety fencing on the retaining wall, which we've already covered.
Hold on a second.
Yep.
Okay.
Comment 12 is regarding the 20-foot setback line on the south side of the property. It was inaccurately illustrated. We'll correct the illustration, but we continue to comply with the setback requirement.
Okay.
Comment 13, this is regarding canopy trees around the perimeter of the parking areas to reduce the heat island effect, and we would propose to coordinate with Mr. Mazzucco as a condition of approval to address that comment. Comments 14 and 15, the applicant will comply with. Comment 16, this is the 25-foot buffers, which we've already covered.
Mm-hmm. 17,
we're reducing to 6 feet, so we can comply.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 18 through 20 are ones that we will comply with.
Alright.
21, we will coordinate with the landscape architect to work on filling that gap on the southern side.
Okay, hold on.
Yep.
Okay.
22, we will also coordinate with Mr. Mizuko on to see what trees we can add.
Okay.
23, we will comply. 24 is another one where we will coordinate with Mr. Mizuko. This is regarding adding trees along the access road to the basins.
Yep.
25 and 26, the applicant will comply. 27, we will coordinate again with Mr. Mizuko. 28, we will comply. And then we're into section B, which is regarding lighting. Comment one, the applicant will has committed to a maximum color temperature of 3,000 Kelvin.
Yeah.
Number two is asking for testimony, which we've provided. And then number three was... Yep.
Will the all light fixtures be dark sky compliant?
Yes.
Okay.
And then for B3, regarding hours of operation, the applicant will dim its lights at 9 p.m. You have to have some lighting for safety.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest we go to the lighting.
Yeah.
Before we go on.
Oh, yep.
You're going to dim them at 9.
Mm-hmm.
About morning,
you
brighten them up.
Yeah. And then you dim them at 9 p.m. When can you turn them off before they come back on?
I mean, we just set timers, so you know, we did set a timer in the morning to allow them to come back on.
So it probably depends on when sunrise is, right?
When do they come by again for the morning?
We could set that at 5.
Just for the record, I wanted to acknowledge that Jeff Keller of Habitat by Design is another board professional, did send his comments, who were transmitted via Jim. So just, so I wouldn't, okay.
Oh. I don't
know which expert he is, but he's an ecologist.
Yeah.
Okay,
got it. So they were included in
via Jim.
Right. Jim's memorandum.
So you're
aware. Cool. Yeah, okay, yeah. They look familiar. Okay. So I'm moving to lighting. Hang on. I gotta switch.
That was the Mont McDonald Lighting.
November 20th. And the applicant will comply with all of the comments here.
Okay.
Those are all of the reports that I am aware of.
No, there's one more.
Oh.
A late-breaking one that came in probably after you and I left our office. M2 Associates.
There's a couple of copies here.
Thank you.
The geologist.
Okay.
You want to take a 5-minute recess so they can quickly read this?
Let's do that.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, you want to just do a quick...
Yeah.
What time is it now?
9:04. You want to say...
9:10?
9:10. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, I need one at some point. All right, I'll take this. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. John's in here. I'm good. Okay.
There's a whole lot to say.
The rest of them should be a lot faster.
Yeah, this
is, yeah.
Downhill skiing.
The engineer is the 10 times faster than everybody. Yeah.
A lot of detail.
Yeah, that's a good detective.
Yeah, that's
Can't find him, I mean, that's it over there. All right. Let's get back. We want to get out of here. The reason the Milano one.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, where we left off was on the M2 Associates Inc. memorandum.
Yeah, everybody. All right. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, where we left off was on the M2 Associates Inc. memorandum, also dated November 20th. The applicant has had a chance to review the memorandum and will comply with all of the comments therein.
Good.
At this point, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any further questions for Mr. Hansen. We're happy for him to respond to any questions that you or your professionals or the public may have for him.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on what we've already done? All right. Now, if anybody from the public has any questions for this particular expert, you come up and ask them now. Remember, if it's general comments, you bring them at the end. But come on up if you want to talk about with this guy.
You want to ask any questions?
Yeah.
About his testimony. Again,
I'm not an expert on what he is an expert on.
No, we're not asking you to be an expert. You're a member of the public. Come on up. But this is not the time to just talk about the project. It's to talk about. Come on up and try
to ask him questions.
So it was a bunch of things you talked about. Topics. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah.
So first, identify yourself on the record.
Mike Bamberger.
Can you spell your last name?
AMBERGER. Okay. Sorry, rename the variance.
Can you pull the paper off the mic? Don't touch the mic.
Yep. Three main points.
Okay, but these are questions,
okay.
Not points. You're okay. Asking questions. If you have the points, you wait till the
end. Well, I want to say it because I don't know if he's the person to ask, so I don't waste time.
Yes,
to answer.
Right,
so the number of trees, is that for you guys?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. The lighting, that's for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And then building, we've talked about this in previous meetings.
Building is the architect.
Riparian zones and stuff like that. Any building in those areas?
No, that would be him.
Okay, so all three of those are your area.
Yeah. Okay.
So the number of trees, you said it was supposed to be 6,500 trees, mm-hmm. and we're down to 945 if you count those as trees. But 97% of that 945 of a mature height of less than 35 feet. So I would argue those aren't really.
You're not making a question.
Okay. How many trees, out of the 6,500 trees, how many of them would be trees that would be considered canopy trees that are taller than 35 feet?
So I'm going to rephrase your question, make sure I have it right.
Sure.
So are you asking if the applicant were to plant all 6,500 replacement trees, what height would they be required to be planted at?
Or what would the mature height of those trees?
What would they grow into?
Yes.
That's what you're asking.
Yes.
Do you know?
I think what you're saying is that if we comply.
He's asking. He's not saying anything. He's asking.
If I understand what you're asking, it would be if we did all of the replacement trees, which are 2-inch diameter at breast height, what would be the mature height that those trees would grow?
Yes.
Okay, my understanding would be somewhere around 30 feet.
And how many years would it take to hit 30 feet?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. I'm not an arborist.
We have someone who's qualified to answer that. Jim, how long would it take for replacement trees to reach their mature height of 30 feet? Approximately
20 to 30 years.
Okay.
Next question on the trees. There is not, at least when I look at the plans, there is not one tree being planted in the rear of the property.
Is it true?
Okay.
Is it true?
Is it true? Or is it, am I reading the plan correctly to see that there is not one tree being planted in the rear of the property?
I'm going to refer to A2 to answer the question.
Exhibit A2.
Mm-hmm. So all of the vegetation that you see that is not this light green, okay, so it's part of the aerial,
mm-hmm.
those are all to remain.
Okay.
As far as planting trees in the rear of the property, there will be vegetation planted in the stormwater management basins as was requested by some of the professionals. but we're not proposing to remove trees and then replant trees. So, and we're not proposing to have, you know, substantial canopies or anything in the back of the property.
Okay. I don't know how to phrase this as a question. I feel like I'm playing
But are there
or have concerns been raised due to the considerable amount of noise that we already received into the properties behind there from Route 31, that we're now removing all of those trees and that noise is going to be even more disturbing to the residents that live right behind that?
Well, here's what I can say. I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm not a noise expert, okay? But I've been involved in these types of proceedings for 30 years, okay? And what I've heard from people who are noise experts is that the trees themselves generally don't block noise, okay? But structures like buildings do, and structures like berms, earth berms, do. So what we're proposing is these four structures, of course, which I think will provide some noise barrier. And then we're also proposing, as required by the landscape ordinance, a 3-foot high berm in the front, okay? And then plantings on top of that. So I think that is going to provide, as a non-expert noise, I think that's going to provide some noise attenuation that you don't have now.
And can I also add to the area where the basin is in the rear? There is, because it's classified as a class 4 dam, you typically don't want to plant on the embankments for the, if you don't want to put planting where you have roots or creates cavities or future decay in that embankment. That's exactly like a dam. That's why in dam structures you typically don't see vegetation.
Right, you're not allowed to have any as far as the dam safety standards go.
Okay, and then so everything that is not highlighted in green, you're not touching any of those trees?
No. That's correct. This represents the limit of disturbance. So there will be a little disturbance at the bottom of this wall in order to build the wall, okay, on both sides. So that's not 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. But the idea is to only disturb the minimal that we need to build the project within the limited disturbance, as will be approved by this bunch of professionals and the Soil Conservation District.
Mr. Hanson, it might be helpful to go to A1 just to see the entirety of the property and the kind of tail of the property that's not being disturbed.
And that's what we're regarding to the proposing a permanent conservation easement.
Right. And maybe
so
kind of...
they can't later come and take out any trees.
Put them together so...
Yeah. That's one of my other questions.
Right.
So you kind of show A1 and A2 just so that he has a sense of the... There's kind of like that tail that is not going to be...
Yeah, I think will be better.
Okay.
C5 of the plan, so it's not marked as an exhibit.
Okay.
That is better. Yep.
And this really shows, this is a site plan sheet, and what this shows is the locations of the building, the stormwater management improvements, and so you get a real sense of the distance here between what's going to be disturbed and constructed and where the property lines in the river are. Mm-hmm.
So you said about an easement, the conservation.
So can you use your pointer, point out what you believe the conservation easement area is going to be?
Okay, so this is the south branch of the Raritan River. I'm talking about the most southeasterly portion of the property. Adjacent to the south branch of the Raritan River is where you have the floodplain, the flood we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. You also have the wetlands. They have a 150-foot transition area.
Yeah, can you,
and so what we're proposing to do is encompass those regulated areas with a conservation easement.
And what does that provide? What does the easement prevent?
What does the conservation easement say cannot be done in the area within it?
Right. You can't, basically, most conservation easements are going to say that you can't disturb them unless there's, like, minimal trimming for trees for safety or if a dead tree falls.
But can you dig?
They can't disturb the property.
Can you build trails? Okay. That's documented?
It will be.
I had this question, and it was a little vague, and it would be nice if it was just put into wording that no trails can be created in the easement area.
Let's ask them. Would you agree to a condition that you can't put trails in the easement area?
Yeah, I mean, we have no intention of working with
any area that's the southeast of the bases. So, you guys don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
We want it.
Right. I'm writing down that if they approve this, the condition is going to be no trails within the easement area.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then, there was a lot of plans. I didn't have a whole lot of time to review this. The location of the lighting, primarily concerned with towards the back of the property.
Okay, well, the lighting essentially is just to light the areas of the walkways and the pavement and the driveway coming in. So there'll be some lights on the back of these buildings just for safety purposes.
Okay,
so if somebody's out there, it's not dark around the building. But there's no lighting around the stormwater management basin. There's no lighting in the rear of the property. We'll have some security lighting at the pump station.
And will any of that be dimmed at night, or
everything?
I heard that. I just don't know if there's different lighting, and some has to be on all night, and some can be dimmed, or will everything be dimmed?
Well, I think everything has to be on all night long, because you might have somebody that works a graveyard shift.
Okay.
But the lighting levels will be dimmed down to less than the maximum. During the 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Yeah. And anything on the low end of the walls, mm-hmm. I mean, that won't be on except, you know, for safety reasons. You know, so if there's an emergency down at the pump station, we have lighting, but it won't be lighting that's constantly on in the middle of the night.
Okay.
And then, is it possible to add evergreen trees that get tall, like Norway spruce or something like that, towards the back of the property to insulate from noise and lighting? We have a lot of residents that live in right behind this, and the trees absolutely do provide insulation from noise, because as soon as the leaves fall off the trees in the fall, then we get considerably more noise. So now if those trees are gone, I mean, you can ask a whole bunch of people here. When 18-wheelers do their engine braking on 31, it's considerably louder after the leaves fall. So it would be really nice, and I don't think this is too much of an ask, if the area behind the retention walls, it's going to be disturbed anyway, if you could put evergreens that eventually will get tall, like Norway spruce, even white pine are worse, I think, for the deer, but Norway spruce are pretty cheap, fast growing, they provide noise and light insulation.
Yeah, I think we could, my client's saying yes, so I think with the caveat that as long as they're appropriate so that they're not going to impact the design of the wall or the base of the wall, I think we can certainly put something in.
Hold up, Jim, if I added a condition that said add evergreens to the east side of the retaining walls in a location appropriate for their growth and appropriate so it wouldn't negatively impact the retaining wall, would you be okay with that?
Yes, with one question though, is because they're right now they're showing limited disturbance basically going up to the retaining wall.
Yes, they have to be more.
So we're going to take up more trees to put in the evergreen.
Just to clarify, okay, because I said this to you before.
It was this, yeah.
Yeah, this isn't exactly shown correctly because you have to disturb on the downside of the wall in order to build the wall. You got to get around it. So basically, you're going to have a strip here and here that you're going to either replant with vegetation or put some trees and vegetation in there. So we can put trees and vegetation.
And that's exactly what I'm asking.
But
it's going to be disrupted anyway.
How high is this retaining wall? How high do these trees have to grow?
It's going to take years.
Yeah, will they ever get that tall? I'm just saying, is this
no way spruce wood?
Yeah.
Norway spruce can get 70 feet tall.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if they're willing to do that,
it's not cost anything. That's
right.
Grounds to put them.
Stay down.
Yes. They agreed to do it. I know.
Well, if there were other trees that they probably don't.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right. What else?
That's all at it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else for this witness?
Rob Gerson, D-U-R-S-O, Fulton Township. And you talked about a pavement. I forgot what you called it, but it allows
the porous pavement.
Drainage.
Mm-hmm.
So are these parking lots going to be salted in the wintertime?
They will.
Okay. And will that salt seep into the ground and eventually into the river?
Well, no, I mean, any salt that is going to be put down is going to go and filter through that system and then filter through the bioretention system.
So anything that's going through that pavement is going to stay in that system and not affect the river?
Well,
am I understanding that correctly?
I would say that some of the salt would eventually make it to the river, but just like any other development. But this meets the water quality requirements, even given the salt and sand.
And it's going to be, because of the karst landscape and the conserved carbon of rock, they're going to have an impermeable liner under the impervious paint. So there's underdrain connections to their storm system, so it will have to go through the porous pavement, through any media under that, through the drain and into the system down to the detention basin. So it would be, it's going to be a less of an impact than it would be if your standard salt of pavement and it runs through the detention basin as the work is going through there. But because of that concern for sinkholes and carbon rock, they're going to put either PVC or some type of membrane under the anywhere where there's going to be potential for infiltration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jody Moss, Clinton Township.
What's your first name again?
Jody, J-O-D-I.
Okay, and Moss, M-O-S-S?
Correct. Now, you say the issue with the trees is because of a hardship, correct? Because it's 100% affordable housing, you want to use that space for units.
Correct.
Is there any way that maybe we can get a total of the trees that you're putting in versus how many that the township requires?
We did.
Okay. Is it possible maybe the applicant would donate the rest of the trees
That's why I read that part of that regulation. That's considered a cost-generative requirement.
Asking, would they consider donating the rest of the trees?
So don't ask us.
We have the green team with Amy Switlick.
She's asking you if you would voluntarily agree to that. She's not asking the board, because I've advised the board they can't ask for that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we can't.
No trees, but more affordable housing.
Yeah. Well, we're doing our best as...
I'm just saying that the requirement that this is going to cut trees for affordable housing.
That's what the state of New Jersey requires.
Correct. Let's call it what it is. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes, especially
right.
When part of that property was farmed not too long ago, and it's just poof, everything's gone. They can't even meet the requirements because of affordable housing hardship for the land.
I don't think they said hardship.
Do hardship?
Yeah. I'll put it this way.
Because it's 100% for the round three.
It is.
Just
correct.
So I'm clear on it.
Yes, you're absolutely clear about it.
And you won't donate the rest of the required trees. Just as thank you to the township and the people and the residents that are going to deal with living behind this and around it with the traffic.
Wow. This project is going to be funded by tax credits, and so there are limitations on the costs that can be associated with the project. So in addition to the state's rules that talk about not having cost-generative requirements, in order to finance the project in accordance with the HMFA's requirements, we would not be able to take on that cost.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ed Kane.
Kane or Kane?
Kane.
Okay.
K-A-N-E. Ed.
Got it.
What percent of the acreage is being developed?
Can you put that exhibit up and show the whole thing? It's exhibit A1.
Mm-hmm. I might be able to...
Okay, so our entire land disturbance, I would call that the development, is 285,534 square feet. That's 6.6 acres.
6 acres?
6.6 acres.
Okay, and the entire acreage
so lot 6.01 and lot 6 together, the total mm-hmm. acreage is what?
It's 11 point, let's see, it's actually 12 acres. It's 11.237 plus 0.843.
So what percentage of 12 acres is 6.6 acres disturbance?
A little more than half.
Well, let's do the calculation.
I'm just excited I can do the math.
55%.
55%. And then you take, so you take half 55%. All that acreage.
They're disturbing. They're disturbing 55%, whether it's buildings, pavement, yep. sidewalks, whatever.
Well, and grading.
And
too.
Grading.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the trees, that's 6,500 that should be put in normally, that's the requirement. In the trees, not only, there's a lot of trees to. It's not just.
Hey, listen, you got to make it a question at this point. You can argue that to the board later.
Got it. 65. How many, if you put trees on the back, which you had said maybe you could.
No, they said that they agreed to put in evergreens adjacent to the two retaining walls. And I'm going to make that a condition if the board approves it.
Okay. So you put the snowy spruce in, they grow a foot a year. And how many feet are those walls? How many trees are you going to put in behind those walls?
Well, you figure, I said 430 feet of wall. So if we place them at, say, you know, 10 feet.
How about 6 feet?
10 feet on center to make sure they grow, or if you put them 6 feet on center, will they still grow? The condition is going to say they have to be appropriately spaced so that they can grow and appropriately spaced so they don't damage the wall.
So I think you're talking about 40 trees.
Okay. So you're looking to do the whole line of each? So
that's, they've agreed.
6 to 10.
Let me tell you, the guy who was up here to ask, Mike Amberger, he asked for the whole line, they agreed. I wouldn't go back. They already agreed. Nothing good can come of revisiting that.
The reason why I'm concerned, I can see the solar panels now. I live right back there, too. I see the solar panels. 6 acres of solar trees were taken out to put solar panels in for the wellness center right next to it. So the wellness center, you took out 6 acres. Put solar panels in, and then nothing grew underneath the solar panels. Right now, erosion, sediment...
Is it all the time? Right. Question. You're asking questions.
You're basic. How deep is that basin?
It's about 6 feet deep.
6 feet deep?
Yeah.
And then how do you get the water out of it?
It has an outlet.
Is it going into the river or not?
It has an outlet structure. So I'm going to pull up sheet 7. This is part of the set, not modified. So we have two different basins in order to meet our water quality standards. So the water, after it goes through the other treatment, its final destination is in the basins. And then each basin has a concrete outlet structure, which then regulates the flow. So as the water builds up, it has an orifice and it has a weir, two stages, and then the water will come out and basically drain towards the river. So it has an outflow.
It goes onto the ground there then?
It goes onto the ground, yeah.
Okay. And that concrete that you're putting in, those concrete parking lots, the pervious concrete?
Yeah, it's pervious pavement. It's asphalt.
It's asphalt, which is the same as pervious concrete, yeah.
It is.
Basically.
Yeah. Just black.
Right. Because it doesn't drain as quick as the ground, but because you got aggregate glued together there, hold it.
Is that correct?
Well, could you phrase that question again?
Well, when you do pervious concrete,
ask him. He wants to know if pervious concrete drains as fast as a lawn.
Well, the water will go through this faster than a lawn. Okay, because a lawn you have, you know, clay soils, topsoils, okay, that
going to hold some of it. So you have an initial extraction, the water goes in there, and then it slowly goes into the ground. Here, it'll go in faster, okay? And then there's a volume, okay, of storage, and then as the water builds up, it goes out the under drain and then goes down to the rest of the system.
I said the under drain. Are you going to have drains, though, in those concrete parking lot areas?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is drains besides the pervious.
There is. There's okay. Drains
the
to
pervious.
The pervious catch the water, goes through that, and acts like a filter, and then the drain's on the bottom, and that carries the water downstream.
Okay. Because it doesn't drain. You have oil and stuff that sit on top from your cars.
Ask him, do you have oil?
The oil goes into the porous pavement system.
Right.
And the porous pavement system is approved by DEP to have 80% TSS removal. Total suspended solids. Okay, but that's a term that reflects motor vehicle pavement, any kind of solids, including oil. Okay, it's supposed to treat it.
No, I understand with what you're saying. I mean, some of it is for later comments, I guess.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a follow-up question for John. You mentioned before about the sound abatement, and you mentioned a berm in the front of the property. I just don't see it on the grading plan. Is there a berm proposed on that?
No, one of the comments I think was in Mr. Mazzucco's report was, do you have compliance with a certain section? And we said we would do compliance, and that part of that section requires that you have a 3-foot berm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Somebody wanted to...
I'll be quick. Ryan Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I, T is in Tom, T is in Tom.
Thank you.
All right, so let me see if I can screw this up. Would it be reasonable if I asked you, would it be reasonable to have the, as Mike Amberger recently stated, you know, we came to the agreement that we're going to put in certain trees, can we have them planted in a way that's going to block the light? I think that would be advantageous for everybody. Would that be reasonable to ask that?
I think it's reasonable, and I think what we typically do with things like that is you site them in the field with help from the board professionals. So let's say that you have a source of a light was on a wall or something. You could position the trees between the next house downstream and that light, and you could do it in a way that gives you the best screening.
Okay.
It's a field modification.
I kind of have to jump in on that one, though, because your perspective changes as you move along, you know, as your residents above. So you could block the light from one house, and it could be open for another.
Right, correct. If you block his house, you're going to put the light somewhere else's house.
There's not enough houses in the area, really, to have that situation. I think you could do it. I think you could strategically put them in the right spots.
Okay, so we're going to do the best we can to block the light for everybody. Okay, all right. That's good. Thank you.
Thanks. Jack Brennan, Union Township. I'll make it short and sweet. I won't ask for all of them. We're not going to disturb Riverfield Park at all, correct?
Could you repeat the question?
Will you be disturbing Riverfield Park at all?
No, and I'm not familiar with Riverfield Park.
Well, that's on our south side. Okay,
hold on. How close to Union Township is this?
I'm not sure. I don't think we're within 200 feet.
Is that park in Union Township?
No, it's right. It's adjacent.
So this question is
Riverfield Park.
Go ahead.
Do you know anything about it?
They don't know.
I don't know anything about it.
I can show you on the map.
It's there. Okay, I don't imagine you'll disturb it, but you do have to stay 10 feet away from it to where you're. Okay, just a few. First of all, our original plan, your original plan is September 15th. We had 55% affordable, correct?
Correct.
And then we had...
there were 146 total units, 55% affordable for 80 affordables.
And 66 market.
Correct.
Rate.
Yeah.
Now, what were our reasons to take the market rate out?
He wants to know, why are you seeking to amend the plan to reduce the total number of units from 146 by reducing all the market rates and to then increase the number of affordables from 80 to 96? Why?
As an engineer, I can't answer that question.
Okay.
Stop. Can you answer the question why?
Sure. Jeff Long with Ingerman. During the subsequent 2 years from when we made the initial application to this board, there were a couple of major economic swings that happened out in the universe, but also the HMFA worked with the state legislature to use certain federal dollars to allow for the development of 100% affordable properties. So this parcel is eligible for those funds, so we repositioned the property towards the 100% affordable funds that were available by the HMFA.
Okay. Would one of the reasons be that maybe those market rates, those people would not want to live in something like this when it's all very low and low and moderate housing?
No. Ingerman has developed across the state a plethora of different types of development opportunities. We've successfully developed multiple mixed income communities, including the inclusionary development that's in the town of Clinton, U22, which has a 20% set aside. We've even gone as high as a 50% set aside in the town of Aberdeen, which is a very successful development called The Forge.
All right, I'm very concerned about these children. Now, these children are more or less positioned in this project. If they want to leave, they're going to walk out. I was told at the last meeting that you were going to tie into adjacent sidewalks, but we know there are none, okay, as of now. All right, but I was told there were there. I went out after the meeting.
What meeting were you talking about?
The first meeting we had.
The zoning meeting.
Okay.
At town council.
Okay. Town council.
The
town
were... council. When we were talking about the zoning.
When we were doing the zoning ordinance.
Right.
Not the planning board hearing on this application.
Well, this was at the September 13th.
Yeah, that was township council.
I wasn't here. It wasn't here, so go ahead. Finish the question.
Okay, as far as these children, if they want to leave this area, they don't have much choice. They're either going to have to walk on the shoulder of the road. They can't cross the highway because there's a barrier there. So these four children are going to be basically locked into this area.
So what's your question to the applicant?
Well, I'm just saying,
this is not the time for comments.
We've
got to keep this moving. We'll answer your questions, but you need to ask. You're not asking us. You're asking the applicant. So what's your question about the children?
No, that's a comment he's going to make to the board.
I know.
There is no question about the children. Ask them questions. You make your comments later to the board.
So we just wiped out those children and basically...
Listen, you can't make comments right now. You can't ask questions right now.
Oh, okay, as far as...
Based on his testimony, you are entitled to ask him questions. Later, you're entitled to make comments to the board, but now's not the time for the comments.
Okay.
Now's the time for the questions.
Well, that was one of my questions with these children.
Okay, that's a comment.
Okay. Sorry.
Any other questions for this witness? I'd like to call your next witness.
Okay, our next witness is the project architect, Mary Johansson. She's already been sworn.
Yes.
Before we get Well, let's introduce you, and then we'll talk about exhibits. So, Ms. Johansson, can you please introduce yourself to the board and the public and tell them a little bit about your experience and credentials?
Certainly. I have appeared before this board previously with the preliminary application for this. My name is...
And by the way, you guys have to stop talking in the back, too, so we can hear you. Go ahead.
My name is Mary Johansson. I'm a principal with Thriven Design. I'm a licensed New Jersey architect in good standing. I have a bachelor's of architecture from Virginia Tech. I've been employed with Thriven Design for 29 years, where I do predominantly affordable multifamily and senior housing. And I appeared before this board presenting the preliminary site plan application.
So we'd ask that Ms. Johansson be accepted as an architect, please.
I see no concerns, especially since you've been here before. I will ask the public, too, if anybody have a concern with this witness.
Questions on the qualifications of this witness? No.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. So before we get going with your testimony, do you have exhibits you would like to pre-mark?
Yes, I do.
So I think we're up to A4.
I have them all written down.
How many exhibits do you have?
Five exhibits. The first is...
Let's get them all pre-marked.
Yes.
So A4 is going to be...
Architectural drawing A14, Willows at Spruce Run, rendering dated 11-20-2023.
Okay, so you have to mark it. In the lower right-hand corner, put in A4 with today's data. That's going to be architectural rendering.
Sheet A14.
Sheet A14 dated November 20th, 2023.
Correct, and it's been done by Thriven Design. And then A5. A5 will be architectural drawing A1, floor plan, building A. Let me pause you.
Was this submitted? Was this in the package?
These were submitted with the original package. They have been corrected related to the building unit mix.
Okay.
Architectural drawing A1, floor plan, building
A, as an apple.
Building A.
Correct.
We have buildings 1, 2, we have 4.
Type A is, we have type A and type B, two building types across.
Building type A.
Building type A.
Okay.
Dated November 20th, 23, and it's been prepared by Thriven Design.
This is A5.
A5.
Just so everyone knows, at the end of the hearing, all of these exhibits have to be taken off the boards, folded up nicely, and given to the board secretary.
Yep, understood.
A6
is sheet A3,
correct,
which is third floor building type A.
It's dated 11-20-2023.
Also by Thriven Design.
Exhibit A7 is architectural drawing A7, first floor plan, building type B, dated
11-20-2023.
Shut that door, please.
All right, and lastly, A8.
Correct. A8 is architectural drawing A9. Third floor plans, building type B, dated 11-20-2023.
Thank you. Okay. So now we have our housekeeping done. Ms. Johansson, if you can please tell us about the buildings that are proposed and explain the elevations and renderings that you've prepared.
Buildings that are included in the design package that was submitted are nearly identical to those that were submitted with the preliminary site plan application. There are fewer buildings, but they are approximately the same size with 24 units in each building. There's three stories in height, and they contain a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. The other change is the clubhouse, the community building, which initially was a 1.5-story building, approximately 3,500 square feet, that due to the consolidation of the site, reducing the developable footprint, that has been reduced to 2,165 square feet, and it is attached to the north end of building number 3. That is what you see depicted in Exhibit A4, which is the architectural rendering that is up. At the left side, you see the clubhouse, which has the label clubhouse on it, which is the 1.5-story, which is attached to the 3-story building behind it, which is the architectural style representative of all 4 residential buildings. The rendering shows the materials that will be used on all of the buildings. We have a combination of materials, and these are identical to those previously submitted with the preliminary site plan application. We have similar roof lines with the shed and gambrel roofs. We have a combination of vertical and horizontal cement board siding with single hung windows. We have a stone around the lower level, the base of the building around all sides. And you'll see those materials on the 3-story building as well as on the clubhouse. So architecturally, they are a cohesive design.
It is the same material, same colors as last time, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
The buildings are designed with 24 units in each building. On the front of each building, there are 2 entrances, and each entrance serves 12 apartments. There was some comment about lighting. The lighting of the entrances will be done with downlights in the porch roof that covers the entrance into each building, so they will not be visible on the facades of the building. There will be wall packs added to the rear of the buildings that will be on motion sensors only. They are not used to light walking paths. They are not used to light entrances or parking areas. These are just for if someone is in the back of the buildings where they shouldn't be, the lights will go on. Those will be of the same Kelvin degree temperature that was previously requested for the pole fixtures in the parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be mounted no higher than 16 feet above grade. The grade varies around the building. It is likely they will be lower than the 16 feet.
Just on that one point, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. Could we just bias these guys? Do you need 16 feet? Could you commit to lower?
Yes.
How low can you go? That's the question. I know you're allowed 16 feet, but how low can you go? Mostly concerned with the easterlymost facade to face the reservation.
10 feet? 8 to 10 feet?
Yeah.
That's good for us. 8 feet or 10 feet?
What?
It's
got to
be functional.
Right. It's got to be functional, but the lower the better.
Can we say
on those east
that we'll do, that we'll agree to 10 feet, but we'll go lower where practicable?
Yeah, okay.
Good.
Building mounted. Pack lights to 10 feet and where practicable?
Practicable. That was the word I said.
Yeah. Where practicable, lower, less than 10 feet.
Yep.
Okay. Keep on going, guys.
The other thing I wanted to point out, which is the reason that we have the additional exhibits, is there was a discrepancy with the unit mix for compliance with the UHAC requirements in the rezoning ordinance.
Mm-hmm. And just for folks who aren't speaking this every day, UHAC stands for Uniform Housing Affordability Controls, and those are the state standards that specify how many one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three-bedroom units you can have, among other affordable requirements.
And that's also part of the settlement agreement with Fair Share Housing Center, requires that all the affordable housing projects comply with the UHAC regulations.
So on architecture, on the Exhibit A5, the unit statistics chart was amended to be 16 one-bedroom, 56 two-bedroom, and 24 three-bedroom. On Exhibit A6, which is the third floor plan in building type A, we have modified that to make a one-bedroom into a two-bedroom to correlate with the approved unit mix. On Exhibit A7, once again, we have a unit statistics chart that was updated, similar to the prior sheet. And on Exhibit A8, which is the third floor plan, building type B, once again, a one-bedroom unit was changed into a two-bedroom so that the floor plans on the revised drawings and the unit matrix, the unit statistics chart, all comply with the rezoning ordinance.
So I could, if the board is going to approve this, I can impose as a condition that the architectural drawings shall be revised to conform to exhibits A5 through A8?
Correct. Yes.
Can I ask a quick question? Does that impact parking? Because is it changing the overall units for 1, 2, 3 units? Would that change the parking demand?
The residential site improvement standards calculations were done off of the bedroom calculation that's being discussed now by the architect, because that is already on the engineering plans. So no change. I can't do any more. Just to put a cap on it, the hard math that we did before on the residential site improvement standards is based off of the correct bed distribution.
The architectural drawings are being corrected to make them conform with that.
Correct, yes.
Good. Okay.
Keep on going.
I think that was it for our architectural testimony. And I think the only comment, there are two comments I think that we had reserved from the planner's report for the architect to cover. Those were regarding the change in the unit mix, or the bedroom mix, excuse me, and then talking about the building-mounted lighting, which has also been covered. So I don't have any further questions for Ms. Johansson. Oh, wait, am I forgetting something?
Number 4, the building design. Which is the,
yeah, I think you're good.
And by the way, if it's not a change from the preliminarily approved architectural plans, you don't have to talk about it.
Right.
We have to talk about the amendments.
So I think we've covered what's changed. And so I'm happy to have Mr. Hudson answer any questions.
No questions from our professionals.
Any questions?
Anybody up here? All right. Anybody?
Just one quick question that I noticed as I'm just comparing the community building floor plan to the site plan.
Mm-hmm.
On the east side, it shows a door at the maintenance building, and on the plan, it shows no door, patio, or stoop, and it shows a bench. I don't know if it just needs to be.
Good question.
It's probably something simple that you pick up in the field usually.
No. What? The drawing's got to be coordinated, so one of them's got to be revised.
There.
If you flip to the
You guys want to see what he's talking about? We have it up on the laptop here.
We got it. And basically, John Hansen, for the record, back to testimony. So we will amend the plans to show the door and walkway off the east side of the community building consistent with Ms. Johansson's plan.
Okay, so we're going to revise the site plan to show
door off of Community Center to conform with the architectural drawings, correct?
Yeah.
Correct.
Do we lose the bench or just shift the bench?
I'm not sure I'm seeing the bench.
While we're checking on the bench, there's also a walkway that's going to connect the door to the patio. Patio?
Oh, I do see the bench. Okay. I think we're losing the bench.
There.
No bench. So I'm going to recap. I'd like to recap. So we're on the same page.
Revised site plan to show the door off of the community center.
Yep.
Conform to the architectural plans. Bench will be eliminated.
Correct, and there's a walkway as well that's shown.
And the walkway you're being eliminated.
Walkway staying, bench is done.
Walkway staying.
Okay. Yeah.
The bench is being eliminated.
Correct. Walkway is added.
Yeah. There's no walkway there now.
And I need this plan. Hold on. Where are we going? Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
we're adding a walkway
from the eastern side of the proposed community building.
Well, we're adding a walkway to conform to the architectural plan again.
Right.
Yeah. And that walkway is connecting to the sidewalk that is along the westerly side of the parking that is to the east of the community building.
Okay. You got that?
Got it.
Okay.
Page 13 of the architectural drawing, the signs need to be changed.
Right, this is the same combination of the signs, correct?
So you would take that.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. Nobody else on this side? How about anybody from the public for the architect?
Can I identify myself again?
I can. I am CPR. Just two quick questions. You said motion detecting lights on the back of the buildings. Is there any chance that the ones that are on top of the retention basins could also be that so they're not on all night? Or would they have to be on?
I know, because you testified before you wanted to have a light for that pumping station. He now thinks that you're having that light for the pumping station on all night.
No, I specifically stated
I understand, but that's what you're
talking about. Well, yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, but like anything down there would be specifically for emergency purposes, so if someone would flip it on.
Okay, it's not even on.
All right, so that's easy then.
Yeah. If it's a regional station, it's really CTSA's call. But typically, they would have either a motion sensor or a manual on-off. They don't want to leave the light on.
Right. When they've come in for us for those stations, they're typically manual lights.
Yeah.
That's the closest to the residential. Then I know in U22, there's a lot of different colors on the facades, et cetera. I looked at the hardening siding that you're using. It's almost white. To blend into the landscape a little bit better, would you be willing to adjust the rear facing to make it more of an earth tone color? It wouldn't cost you anything additional. And you already have molten bowls.
Can you pick that exhibit up and show everybody?
And I didn't see the color exhibit, so I see that you already have multiple colors.
Yes. So take a look, because these are the same colors that were previously approved by the board.
Okay.
Well, you're not proposing to change
it
any.
In the plans, it listed just one color, and I see multiple colors now. It said one color, and then plus one. I don't really pain in the neck, but if it was a big, flat, white face with lights on it, it's going to stand out a lot more to the neighborhood than if it was more of that gray tone. Yeah, so in the other plan, yes, I only see one color there.
So maybe, Ms. Johnson, can you talk about the...
There's two moves in on one.
Go back to that sheet.
Can you go back to go back to A13 for a second, please?
His point is that it's not three colors. There's three colors on the sheet, but two of them are roof colors. Only one of them is the hardy siding color, but your exhibit has multiple hardy siding colors.
And what you're showing on the other exhibit is almost white when you look at the website. So all I'm asking is we could do the khaki or taupe or something, which is more like what you're actually showing in the darker, And again, I don't want to be a pain. It just wouldn't cost you anything.
We are showing two shades of gray, the light gray that was shown on the exhibit that was submitted, as well as a darker accent color. But I think on the back of those buildings, we could use the dark tone across the back.
Okay, so listen, I want to be exact about this. Tell me the exact color that the manufacturer uses for both of the colors on exhibit A, that's A5, right?
That's A4.
A4.
I may not have the exact shade of the darker gray tone.
What Mr. Amberger is asking is that the back of the buildings get the darker gray, not the lighter gray. And mm-hmm. I seem to think that you guys are agreeing to that, but all I got is light gray, dark gray. I mean, I have the light gray color, but I don't have any dark gray manufacturer color.
Gray slate.
I don't want to commit to a color.
Yeah, and I guess just not like white. It's just going to be a big flat facade.
See, like it's already committed to the dark gray on the back of the building.
Correct. Right. Mm-hmm. And we can select that exact shade.
Yeah, that's
right. Yep. So on the eastern
facades of the front of the building. Are getting the colors reflected on exhibit 4.
And Mr. Drill, I would suggest we say the applicant has proposed that it's going to have a color palette with two colors, and the darker of the two colors to be used throughout the site will be the color that's installed on the easternmost facade of buildings 2 and 4. And I think that covers us with respect to the condition.
When you get the draft of this resolution, assuming that they approve of all these conditions, I'm going to need some assistance.
All right, thank you. Anyone else for this witness? Or this expert?
Nope.
All right.
Thank you.
Do you have anyone else?
I don't have anyone else. Sounds a little lonely. But that concludes our direct testimony.
Okay.
Do you know what time it is?
Yeah, so what time is it? 10? A little after 10. Let's go for that's the next, yeah.
Is there a traffic report about that area?
Well, if anyone has questions, you can ask questions, but they have a traffic expert here, but this is a permitted use. So when there's a permitted use, off-site traffic's not an issue. The only thing that's an issue is access, egress, and
Ingress,
parking, and circulation are the only issues. And so if anyone has any questions about ingress, egress, parking, or circulation, their traffic expert can answer them, but off-site traffic's not an issue. So anyone have any questions?
Come on, now you can come up with any, right? I mean, it's...
Well, put it this way, let's find out. Does anyone have any questions for ingress, egress, circulation, parking, vehicle circulation on site, or the parking? None. So now for public comments, you come up, I swear you in, and you give the board your comments, if you want them to do anything, what you want them to do, and why.
And we got an idea of some of it. I think we heard some, I think the applicant heard some
information. Well, the applicant already agreed. The applicant has responded to requests. But if you want the board to do something on the application, whether you want them to grant it with additional conditions, whether you want them to deny it, whatever, this is your time.
A question for either, I don't know if he knows, or John may know this better, for context, when you think about this, 96 units of affordable housing fulfills what portion of our outstanding debts?
Well, it's, so...
what portion of the third round obligation?
I don't know the exact figure, but it's a huge chunk. And if it were not a 100% project, it would have had to have been absorbed in a project that's about fivefold in terms of the number of units throughout the township, because the sort of a 20% set aside.
Well, except this one was a 55%.
Okay, right. I'm just saying it will leave development pressure elsewhere. So if you're looking at a total closer of 500 units township-wide, to achieve the same.
I think that's too complicated. What I'm trying to get is have people sort of understand township has obligations for affordable housing. We're knocking 96 off the list today.
Right.
It's a required. That's not an insignificant number. These things just don't go away. So in order for us to be able to fulfill the requirements that the state has put on us, this gets us a long way, I believe. I don't know what the number was. That was what I was asking. What's that number? 96 out of.
We're going to tell you.
It's important. You make a good point, Tom. This is the state requirements, and we're constrained by the state rules and regulations as it relates to costs, as it relates to conditions.
We have to put in affordable housing.
So we're all trying to do the best we can given this mandate that the state has put upon all towns.
Right. That's what I was kind of after then.
If I had my laptop, I'd be able to answer.
It won't work. Yes. There we go.
By the way, this project, it was going to produce 80 units.
80 affordable units.
The 80 units, the 80 affordable housing units, plus the, how many from Grey Rock Road?
7.
Okay, that was 87 plus three special needs. So there were 89 units. Now that we're at 96, 96 minus 89 is going to be applied to the fourth round.
Seven
units are going to be applied to the fourth round.
So this basically knocks out.
This will satisfy our third round requirement?
Well, there's other projects, but the other projects are durational adjustment sites where they're not going to be built until they have sewer and water. This is a non-durational adjustment site.
The numbers, I think it's 335, right?
That's what I'm looking for.
So if it's circa 3-something, it's about a third.
Our number is 335.
Right.
This is 96 units of 335.
Right. And it is worth noting that it is 100%. And if it was inclusionary at 20%, it would be a 500-unit.
I understand, but what I'm saying is I understand that, but in reality, the approval here was for 55%, so it wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah, the preliminary, I agree.
Yes. Right. This is better than what the board preliminarily approved, but I don't think it's fair to compare this with a standard 20%.
When is the fourth round coming out?
July of 2025.
Okay. All right. Anybody
comments?
Anybody else have any questions or comments?
And I don't know if this is the forum, so
okay. Now I've got to swear again.
Okay.
You swear, right now. You swear that the testimony. You swear or affirm that the testimony that you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and the truth.
Yes. All right. So, and this is more directed, I guess, towards Ingerman. So, can I ask you both at the same time?
Well, you can't ask them.
I'm going to ask you about their practices. Is that?
You can't ask them anything. You can make comments to them.
Okay.
You can ask.
Go ahead. We'll just answer through it.
Okay. Ask them.
So this remark is not specific to Ingerman. But there was a law passed in 2021 called the Fair Chance in Housing Act, which basically forbids landlords from discriminating against individuals that want to rent based on their criminal history. And they can only forbid people based on the most egregious of crimes, including being on the lifetime sex offender list. There's an awful lot of crimes that I would argue are pretty bad that they can't discriminate. As a landlord, they have discretion in some cases about who they can for it. That was my number one concern about this project from the get-go, and I would hope that the board would require that when you guys have discretion, that you take the most aggressive path of preventing people with the most egregious criminal histories from renting.
Yeah, and...
So wait, say who you are.
Jeffrey Long, development principal for Ingerman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're aware of that, but that hasn't... We always comply with our fair housing requirements. That has not changed our credit and criminal approach and how we vet residents. We have very stringent requirements that go far beyond what you're outlining. We have not, like I said, we have not changed or been impacted by that. All types of felonies are completely off the table. We do not allow for, things like murder, all types of those types of very serious violent offenses are automatic disqualification.
I read through the whole law. There's a lot of violent crimes that your hands are tied. Some of them you have discretion on, but it's not like you're only forbidding jaywalkers.
Correct. And like I said, we stay on top of our fair housing requirements, but we take safety and resident selection very, very seriously because we do retain ownership of these properties for the duration. Mm-hmm. So problems don't go away. And as you point out, it's incredibly difficult to get rid of problem tenants.
Mm-hmm.
So we take very seriously our selection. I mean, our typical admission rate is probably from applicant to actually resident moving in is probably between 10% and 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's higher than anyone else in the industry in terms of our rejection rate. And that is totally a consequence of how we vet our tenants. It could always be easier to let more people in. But, we're taking hundreds of applications to, in this type of property, we'll take north of, probably 700 applications to fill a 96-unit property. And that's strictly because we take that so seriously, because getting the right people in is just as important as anything else that we do here.
And then can I ask questions directly?
I'm happy to answer questions.
So, and then because I know I've been reading a lot about this for the last 2 years, but I know there have been some horrific scenarios. It wasn't in New Jersey where people were moving in where somebody meets someone and then they're boyfriend moves in, and they have a criminal history.
No, absolutely.
And they didn't sign the lease. Like, are you vetting those types?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can't just move someone in. They have to go onto the lease if they're living there permanently.
So somebody whoever the manager or whatever is keeping an eye.
Yeah, I mean, we have to abide by the township's UHAC requirements, their fair housing requirements, the COA's fair housing requirements, but we also have to answer to the federal government and investors as well who invest in these tax credits. And we, as a company, guarantee that we stay in compliance with all those rules with very harsh penalties if we make mistakes. And so, our lease is very extensive in terms of, this is not a three-page lease.
Mm-hmm.
It takes usually at least 90 to 120 days to vet an applicant and to make sure that they fit all these things. Anything like moving someone in illegally is a lease violation, and that's grounds for termination. We take that very seriously.
Which is eviction.
Eviction, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Lease termination, yeah. But we do take this whole situation very seriously, having people move in. We operate all the time in Hunterdon County. We operate in high-income areas as a regular course of our business, and we take seriously, making sure that those units are leased to appropriate people who meet all the requirements. We're not just moving people in willy-nilly.
And you periodically, if they commit a crime while they're living there, are you...
Yeah, I mean, we have annual...
Stop having income and stuff like that?
Absolutely. I mean, they have annual recertifications.
Okay.
So every year they have to resubmit all their documentation. We have a compliance department within our company. So our management firm has 350 employees. We have about 20 people on staff who all they do is review application, review. And this is very thorough. I mean, you need to submit W-2s, all forms of income that you have. We run credit and criminal as due course of business.
So any of these things that hit, that, you know, come up bad, that's, you know, we move on to the next person.
That's all I had. My only request, I guess, with the planning board, if you do oversee those processes.
They don't.
We don't.
You don't at all. Yeah. But even,
We can't put requirements on.
But they can only review a proposed development. They can't review
what their processes are.
Okay.
Yeah. But I would say, just as a follow-up to that, part of this whole process is why towns bring in, you know, people like myself. But what we do and what we provide the town is that we do have that on-site staff. We also have that type of capability to make sure that these units are being leased. So it's not necessarily some of a smaller operator who's hiring a third party to vet this. Mm-hmm. These are people that work and answer to me.
And how many of these developments have you sold after you built them?
Sold?
Yeah. So in another entity, or have you ever sold it to the state or another?
We've sold out of the 120 developments that we've done. If we've sold 10, that's a lot. And usually those are legacy developments that we did in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, you know, in terms of the portfolio of suburban development that is like this, 100% affordable, we don't sell them.
Okay.
We keep them in our portfolio. We've owned them for, you know, now we're getting on to 25, 30 years of doing this in the New Jersey suburbs.
Okay. All right. That's all I have.
Thanks. Thank you. Anybody else?
Ed Kane.
Right, and now I got to swear you in. Raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're going to give in this matter, will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
Yep.
Okay. Now you direct anything you want to them or ask any questions you want to us or them.
Well, I thought this was also just comments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I live right behind this development. And I've been here 36 years, and I've seen that back then, the county bought the land when he was talking about the Riverview right next to your property is a reservation that the county put in.
Right.
They bought the land. Now with it, and I've watched this where the Wellness Center took out 6 acres of trees. And when they did that, they had the solar panels. They put in 4,000 solar panels within 6 acres of trees. Now, there is no undergrowth there. So what now happens when it rains, the soil and sediment goes down into the river. And basically, I'm looking at, you're removing, you got 65 requirement, and you're putting 15% back of the trees that you're going to remove. And so now we've removed 12 acres. We're putting back 15%. But we never put any back on the 6 acres we did before. So with it, I mean, trees provide oxygen, climate control, noise control, dust control, temperature control, control of erosion and silting of streams and rivers. I mean, you got the wetlands right there. That's a C1 river or stream. And as much as you could to put in the back part, trees and bushes would be helpful. Right now I can see the solar panels. The solar panels are distant, same thing where you are. What happens is I sit here, you got the river here, and you're going to be up here. So those houses, you see what you're putting in. For example, they put a HES station in years ago on 31, which is now, what it's called?
Speedway.
The lights and everything, you can see it from the house. And when they put that in, they lowered the lights on it. So whatever you guys can do in putting more trees and shrubs and stuff, and trees that grow quick like a red oak or spruce grows a foot a year, or trees that will block off things and grow quick. Because it's most of what you were looking at. Out of that 1,000, you had a small percent of trees. You were putting them in bushes. It would be nice, you know, if you took that into consideration and put as much as you can back to be helpful with the neighborhood and the environment. That's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else?
Rob Burso, D-U-R-S-O. Raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be true, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
So I just have a comment along with what Ed was talking about a little bit. As you can tell, my accent's a little different. I don't sound like I'm originally from this area, and you'll see that as I talk a little more. But I grew up in Brooklyn, and I grew up in an area of Brooklyn that was a lot of wildlife and marshes, and it was beautiful. And my dad used to take me down to the water, and we'd go fishing and swimming, and it was great. And today, that area, you can't fish there, you can't swim there. Because of overdevelopment. Developers came in, they built these condos, these housing units along the bay, and everything is polluted today. I had an uncle that moved out to Staten Island, and I used to go there and play in the woods behind his house. I'd be hard-pressed to find woods in Staten Island these days. And to drive through Staten Island, if anyone's ever done it, it takes you an hour to go 5 miles. And that's because of overdevelopment and all these units that they've been putting up all over the place. And now it's creeping out into this beautiful town here. And I think it's pretty symbolic. I'm looking over there at the Jersey State flag is blocking beautiful farmland. After he went to do that. So
farms and tractors, and yeah, I know.
Yeah. And I realize there are certain requirements and there's things that we have to do, but we're really destroying this township with all this overdevelopment. And especially where most of us live over here.
Yeah, where do you live in the back?
We're also in the back. Right in the back there, Riverbend Road, so we're right on the river, and Gray Rock comes right through. And in that development, we have a hotel that just went up. We have plans for the warehouse that's going up. We have these housing units going up. And then
the town. You're not talking the town of Clinton.
No. That's town of Clinton is right along there. So that hotel is town of Clinton.
That's part of my argument.
That warehouse is town of Clinton.
Owns part of that land over there.
Yeah.
So we have the town of Clinton that's building, yeah. And then we have the township that's building right in our backyard. So we don't catch a break in that unit. And there's a lot of young children in there, and a lot of them play in that development. It's a very unique development because it's a big circle, and they play in the street. And that's just going to increase all these new developments and these housing developments, going to increase traffic. And the first thing people do is when there's traffic on 31 is they cut through our development because they come up Gray Rock or they come up from the other way and they cut through the development and then you have all this traffic in there with children playing in the streets. So now you're talking about the potential of a child getting injured from increased traffic going through the area. So these are just, you know, some things I just want to bring to light when you're considering all this development. And I understand we do have requirements, and this would fulfill a big portion of it. But, you know, selfishly, it's in our backyard. And, you know, so I ask you to consider that as well. Thank you.
Just a question.
Sure.
What's your suggestion to do differently, knowing that we have an affordable housing requirement? What's your proposal?
Maybe look some in another area that's not as developed. Like I said, by our section, there's so much development going on right now between the township and the town
because we're right on that border.
Are you aware of any of the sections? I know we have a lot of people looking at this question. It just didn't come up tonight here.
I'm sorry?
Do you have any other areas where this might be? We have a lot of people looking at this.
I mean, I don't.
It's an easy thing to say, go build it in some other neighborhood.
Sure, I understand that.
And I don't want people to think that this is done cavalierly.
Right.
I would like nothing better than to eliminate the affordable housing requirement. I think that's probably true for most people in the township. If anyone has a good suggestion, join the town council and speak up, like your congressman. But in the absence of a good suggestion, it seems to me, and I'm assuming there's going to be a motion, I'm going to vote in favor because it seems to be the best of the poor options in front of us. If people think there's a better option, let us know what it is.
I think what we've tried to do, and I think you've seen it here, even tonight, some movement is there's an awareness, particularly when we talked about Riverbend and that the neighboring houses there. There wasn't as much discussion about the adjacent commercial uses because that's not a problem. But you know, there is an attempt and an acknowledgement, even in citing this, to push it up closer to 31 and away. You know, and try to preserve as much of that wooded area. I know it's C1, but try to minimize the impact because we're aware.
And my concern also is not just because of the housing behind there. No. There's a lot of nature in there, too.
Right.
There's, you know, I'm back there. I go fishing back there. So there's a lot of nature back there that's going to be pushed out, and it's got to go somewhere. And I understand your argument, and I guess if I knew I was going to be coming up here today, I'd have an answer for you. I'd probably have done the research and found another spot for it, but I don't have an answer for you.
No, I don't think the township does either, and we're going to have to come back for another round in 2 years.
Right.
There'll be another group in front of us a couple of years from now proposing...
You know, what's interesting, this has been, I don't want to belabor this too much, but this has been, a lot of development around here has been affordable driven. Look at that U-22 in Clinton Town, that one on Halstead. If you look at residential out here that's not tied to affordable, it has been flat since the crisis in 2015. Yeah. So it's a very, that's what's driving the development out here. And you even heard testimony here that the federal government is sort of shifting money to use for this even, which helps it. But we're aware, you know, I could speak for myself, but I think for most of us, we all came to Clinton Township because of what we saw and what it is, and we do our best to try to keep it that way.
Well, good to know.
So.
All right, thank you.
Ryan Schmidt.
Yeah.
All right.
You swear or affirm the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and the truth.
I do.
Okay.
Just a really quick comment. You know, and I get it, the whole affordable housing thing, you know, you're kind of in a pickle. You know, like, where do you put it? No matter where you put it, someone's going to be mad. You know, but for me personally, in that particular area, it seems like it's very discouraging because it's almost like Clinton is doing everything they can to be built up. Because it's the affordable housing, it's the Taco Bell they're trying to put in, the Wawa, the gas station. Name what, million-dollar question, name one neighborhood that is a Taco Bell that isn't a dump. Right? Like, let's put a Taco Bell. How about a check cashing place? A gun store?
The Taco Bell in Clinton Town?
No. Town of Clinton.
Jason,
this whole strip of 31 is mostly
nervous. I mean, but still, I mean, it's like, you know, once again, we all moved down here because, you know, it's like that.
Know.
You know what really looks good about that cow Taco Bell sign? You know what I mean? So once again, it's you know, affordable housing, we get it, but I'm just trying to understand why we're trying to build up that area so much. You can't tell me that nickel is going to save me on my taxes is why. Like, there's got to be something going on. Like, why would we want to build up this area? Literally everyone you talk to is like, I hate it. I don't want to do it. So why are we doing this? Have a good night.
I know. Any more?
Going once?
Yeah, you can do the going once.
Going twice? Nope, three times. Nobody. Why don't you close the public hearing?
I'll close the public hearing. That was some good discussion. I appreciate it. I think there was some good give and take. So I think that was productive as could be. So with that being said, we've heard the testimony, and John's got the list of the variances. Do a real quick summary of the variances and waivers we need.
Very quickly, the applicant has the preliminary site plan approval.
Correct.
For 146 total units, 80 of which would be affordable. They're here tonight for an amended preliminary. They want to change that. They want to go from 146 total units down to a total of 96 units, but increase the affordables on the site from 80 to 96. And they want an initial final site plan approval. And they need some associated relief.
Correct.
The associated relief started out with more relief, but they put that exhibit in to move the building, and what they're left with in terms of relief is the C variance for the retaining wall height as high as 11 feet. The ordinance says can't go over 6 feet without pyramid. Thank you. They've eliminated all the other C variances, and then they have exceptions. And the exceptions for the tree replacement, for the same reasons that the board granted last time, this is now less extent of an exception. Also, the
25-foot
right exception for not the entire.
Yeah, just those portions. We didn't talk about
portion, those sort of encroachments, which tonight they've agreed to make the encroachments.
In many cases, they reduce them. Yes.
Mr. Joe, on the retaining wall variance, you should just note that there's a safety fence going on top of the retaining wall. So the way I believe your ordinance measures it, well, just when you're specifying the height, the magnitude of the deviation, it's actually plus six.
Right.
I just wanted to.
Right.
Yes. Thank you.
And the we did the tree replacement.
Yeah, those were the big ones, John. Besides
and groundwater recharge.
Right, the groundwater. I'm sorry, because I was.
Yeah.
Did you talk about the 25-foot buffer?
Yep.
Does it? That's it.
What I would say is for the deliberations, you could say for the reasons that were already discussed during the hearing.
Yeah. I mean, look, there were a lot of reasons at each step of the way we talked about it. I'm just recapping. And I think it's important to note that there was a preliminary approval for more units and more buildings and more density. So this is fairly unique in that it's reduced it. And I think we've also got an opportunity and the applicant trying to recognize some of the rear neighbors. So anybody else have any comments?
No, for building the
size, you should have
a few variances
and exceptions. Right.
In the scheme of things.
So, is there a motion to grant preliminary and
amended preliminary
and
initial final C variance
and those exception waivers on this property? Thank you, Mr. Reverso.
Second.
Thank you.
Subject
Mr.
to all the conditions we discussed, and the board's usual conditions set forth in its rules.
Roll call.
Aversa?
Yes.
Fletcher?
Yes.
Higgins?
Yes.
Glazer?
Yes.
Finance?
Yes.
McCaffrey?
Yes.
Semay?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Before we let you go home, and thank you all for all of your attention, I just wanted to talk timing for the resolution. It would ideally, if we could have it for next month, I I think the board does have a meeting in December, but of course it's a tricky month.
We have meetings in December, so we can. Yeah, I think we have two on the schedule.
Oh, wow.
No.
Okay. Wow.
So it's just going to be a matter of if you want to.
Put it this way: if you want to increase the chance, you guys listen.
We'll coordinate. Yeah.
So you give me first
chance. Yep. I thought there was two meetings.
Let me just make sure I know when the meeting is, because I want to duck in enough time.
Yeah.
And that, do you have one on the 18th?
We do have one on the 18th. I know, I do too. Let me look.
The Board of Adjustment may have taken the second meeting in December.
Well, they would have told, they would, I'm not aware.
Oh.
I'm sure
the 18th.
Yeah, I don't either. I wonder if it got.
The Board of Adjustment meeting is the 27th?
But I don't have it on my calendar.
No. When is the Board of Adjustment meeting in December? The planning board. I want to know when the Board of Adjustment meeting is in December to tell if you guys.
Yeah, the planning board is just December 4th.
It's the 4th. You're right. I don't have it on my calendar.
The planning board only has December 4th because the Board of Adjustment has December 18th.
Can the board adopt resolutions at its January meeting, or is it still in for reorg? So, and January meeting is January.
It's right after the town council does their first one.
So, when do you.
Would it be the 8th? That's the second Monday.
I know, you could write.
The possibility is that you just ask these five to show up on Zoom the night of the Board of Adjustment. Meeting.
Yeah, I mean we could do a special meeting.
It's 7 o'clock. Do it 6:30. Because the board secretary, we're all going to be here. The professor's going to be here. You guys join in, and at 6:30 we can adopt your resolution.
I almost prefer to do it that than carry it over.
All right, so we'll do a special. All right, so I'm saying it out loud so I can do it. Special meeting December.
Does that work for you guys to be able to do an
18? 18.
We're just going to. Right. We'll have it beforehand, so we'll.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, this is the thing that you're doing the first draft. Is.
Right.
Right.
I got it.
And you can use that as a forum, obviously.
Yeah.
The resolution from last time.
Yep, I got you covered. And I think you just asked the next question I was going to ask, which is you all will handle the special meeting notice?
We will do the Open Public Meetings Act notice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
We're
going
to say 6:30 to do it earlier
6:30?
So we can be ahead of their meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you getting us done in December, and we appreciate all of your thoughtful comments and suggestions this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
And happy Thanksgiving.
All right, we have, so we can get out of here. You guys can go if you want. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So we have vouchers, guys, and we're off our process a little bit. We haven't been getting one out. She put the cover page on just so you see. If you're okay, I would do a motion to. Taylor, hang on a second.
You're good, I'm good.
I know. We're going to go back to our normal process and get them out for next meeting. So we did a motion, Mr. Averso, and a second by Mr. McCaffrey. I know, vouchers. You want to just do a quick roll call if you're supposed to.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So I'm going to try to find the. Yeah, how about, do you want to just do a motion to. Okay. Second, all in favor.
Really,
got to trust the. All right.
Trying to get the mouse.
And then stop recording.